Hi, and welcome to episode 94 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the British superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And our friend Tony Esmond couldn't make it this week, but as it's week three of our genre-tastic take on April, we called in a specialist. Oh yes. He's a man who not only has written for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and coloured titles such as Judge Dredd and Dungeons & Dragons, so his Twitter page says, but he has worked extensively on comics about a bunch of robots called the Transformers, whatever they are. Have you ever heard of them, Dan?
Never.
No. But it's our pleasure to welcome John Paul Bove to the show, or JP, as he's well known. Hello.
Greetings. Hello.
Hello, JP.
I'm very well.
94 weeks, and you're the first one to say greetings as the hello. I like it.
Well, I like to keep everything kind of 18th century as much as possible.
Felicitous day to you all.
If you've ever seen him at a convention, then you know that he dresses like he's from the 18th century as well.
I do. I wash myself in the traditional things at the time as well, such as nothing and other people's smells.
You're welcome home at the Comic Con crowd then.
I'm like in The Walking Dead when they cover themselves in the zombie cuts. I just blend in.
Oh dear. But we love the Comic Con crowd. in case anyone wants.
I am the Comic Con crowd. I can't. Yeah. There's no denying it.
Yeah.
look at the shell of a man that I am. There's no, you know.
And also, you do a fair few conventions, don't you?
Yes, more than I really should for a man that needs sleep as much as this man does. But yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Even in different countries.
Really?
The US and Germany have been places I've been.
Nice.
But yeah, since having a tiny human creation, I think that's another name for it.
Or a baby, rather than just a small person. Yeah.
That definitely makes things harder now to go, you know, on planes, boats, and things.
Do you have to put them as hand luggage?
I just, to be honest, we leave them at home with a dish of water and some straw, and so far, he's been fine every time we come back, so...
No problems.
Social
services.
Dear social services, the above was a joke. Please do not come round to my house. Because I don't use straw, I just let the carpet absorb it.
Oh, God.
I'm sure no one in government listens to this.
I'm surprised if anyone listens to this.
Yeah.
Yes. You've worked on
this is what the this is what the people who are planning for Brexit are listening to instead of actually working out what's going on. So the government is listening to it, but they're like, oh shit, I should really think of something now, because, you know, a couple of years from now, I don't know what's happening.
There was a heartwarming moment on Twitter earlier, because, you know, Theresa May did some statement about how the country's coming together.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People sort of said, that's not, arguably not. But what people did come together was, on the comments of that tweet, this hate on her from either side. It was kind of heartwarming, especially when it's a Sunday.
It's kind of, I mean, that is kind of unifying in a way.
Yeah.
I think the true meaning of Easter could be better encapsulated by just putting her in a cave and then rolling a stone over and just leaving her for 3 days to see what
how
happens.
She gets on.
Yeah.
All for that. We better change the subject for
this
political. this
Vote
week
Trump. Too late.
we're not talking about political comics.
Okay. No.
Oh God, can you imagine if we did that as a topic, Dan?
Oh God, no. Don't want to do that.
No, it's too depressing. The real world is too depressing. So this week our topic is giant robot comics, or giant robots in comics, or, as I came to think of it later, just robots in comics, you know, because what constitutes a giant? Oh, that's an open question.
Maybe it's a massive comic with regular sized robots in it as well.
Yeah.
Like the pages, it's bigger than a broadsheet newspaper. It's like really difficult to turn the pages, but every page has got like
a hardcover.
4-inch robots in it. Yeah.
Just imagine that. That'd be a beast. Yes. Yeah, giant robots. They a staple of comics for years. Giant mechanical creations are always a go-to when creators want to create either a seemingly unstoppable adversary or a badass hero who can take on equally enormous threats. But how big does it have to be considered giant? What makes a cool robot the readers can support and become fans of? And if there was a rumble between some of the big hitters, who would come out on top? Yes, that's a poll that we did today. A last-minute poll that a few people have voted on. So I know it's going to be very interesting, the results of that.
I didn't see that one, so it'll be interesting to see that.
Oh, yeah. And of course, we'll have our own opinions on who's going to win. But probably strong opinions, as this show always has strong opinions. These questions are more going to be what we're going to discuss this week. And if the past couple of shows have been any indication since we started this genre month, then the conversation could go in all kinds of directions and destinations. Because the martial arts show, as I've come to know it and love it last week, that was a lot of movie talk, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good fun last week. Very good fun. And thanks to Chris Imber for joining us there, I think. And I know a lot of people have been looking forward to this one as well with the giant robots, which seem to be quite popular.
I think so.
So to start us off, just a simple question. How attracted are you to giant robots? No.
We should set a parameter of not going around to robot sex. That invariably comes up in every episode.
Look, it's going to come around to robot sex. Do we deal with it now or should we let it come up naturally? Pardon?
we can slip it in later.
Oh, yeah. As always, we'll slip it in later. So... But let's start us off with, what is it about robots that's so popular with readers and creators alike? JP, what do you think?
Oh, okay. Now, you see, I don't like all things. I'm gonna be quite... I don't like everything robot-y. Now, I do like...
I've put you on a spot,
comics. No. It's trying to put it into words. I realize I've never said this out loud before. That's right. I'm talking about the robot sex doll. No, that'll come up later. I always like Transformers more so than say, like Gundam or whatnot. I like robots that they are sentient rather than they're just someone piloting them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So. Although I liked, like Battle of the Planets and that kind of stuff as well, it was just for me the fact that Transformers were like thinking, feeling robots. I just found really interesting, and I think it was just because it was a way of examining things in a way that, like, they're not humans, so you could almost look at problems in a different way. Like, all good science fiction is like metaphor, so
yeah,
you know you have and I think that's, for me, like Transformers is more science fiction than it is like a robot book, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's kind of exploring themes and metaphors for things through the prism of going, well, look, we can look at these aspects of human culture, but it's not actually human culture, so let's take a step back and look at it kind of from the outside. And I was always interested, you know, they're like millions of years old because they don't age the same way as we do, and just, you know, the notion of like, what is it actually like to live millions of years in conflict? Mm-hmm. Like, would you actually be ruined? Like, what was your psyche like? Obviously they didn't do that in Transformers the cartoon, because as much as kids love, you know, war trauma,
they don't. Yeah, they don't really want PTSD in their Saturday morning cartoons.
No, it tended to be more, oh no, Grimlock's fallen over and broken a table, and now everyone's angry. Oh dear. But you know, I think even as a kid, it was just kind of like I don't know. And I think because they transformed, which I just thought was amazing. As a kid, I just used to dream of, like, you know, being in the car. And like the lorry next to me would just like transform into a giant robot, and maybe we'd go on adventures together.
I think the Transformers as well, when it's quite easy to project on them. Like when you got Optimus Prime, he's kind of the nobility of the kind of the ultimate leader. That, you know, there's none of this kind of baggage of him being a human and all this other stuff. He is what he is, and same with the other characters. When there's Megatron, he is evil and bad, but he hasn't got all this other dark crap behind him. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of very much kind of black and white, good and evil.
No, that's very true. Yeah, there isn't, like, there doesn't have to be a moral failing to Optimus Prime. There doesn't have to be a redeeming factor to Megatron. They can just be what they are.
Yeah.
But that's a good point. I like that. Yeah, because again,
personalities of they're kind of very much kind of clear cut, with some being kind of quite gung ho and others being quite pacifist. And it's good to see kind of like this raw kind of these personalities playing out and conflicting off one another. That's one of the things I always really enjoyed about the Transformers.
And I think it's the personalities that they bring to it. Whereas I think when it's like people in robot suits, it never quite connects with me to the same degree as being as interesting, because it's still just like the robot becomes a tool to have a fight.
It
is more of a tool, isn't it? I mean, if you, I don't know, Power Rangers, for instance.
Oh,
oh God.
I refer to Power Rangers as the Duplo. It's like Duplo to Lego's... If Lego is Transformers, then like Power Rangers is Duplo. It's just like everything, all the designs are really kind of crap. I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone here. In fact, I'm not especially sorry. But I think it came out I was a bit too old to have not found it crap when it came out. And I think if you were the... And in fairness, I can understand people who are like 5 years older than me thinking that He-Man is crap. And that's fine. I'm not upset by that. I think it's brilliant because I grew up with it. But Power Rangers, to me, it's just like... I have people who I love who are so into Power Rangers, and I continue to love them. And I want to love Power Rangers because I love them. But... I think
there will always be this divide.
Well, I think, like, the older ones, when they do like kind of the Zords, the robots, I think there's a charm to them. When I see like the modern American remake of it, I've not seen the film, but it's like you just lost any charm that series had. It's been lost because you've taken it a bit too seriously. And I think it's the same with the other one they did. It's kind of just looks like a CGI mess.
It's because it's like, you know, as a kid, when I might be wrong, but like the stuff I really enjoyed as cartoons or live action stuff, the stuff that didn't overly try and play as a show designed for people of limited intelligence. Hmm. Right now, watching Transformers cartoons again, I have to say it does not live up to my memory, like at all.
Most of them don't, though, do they? Yeah.
But it's like when you watch Power Rangers, because I watched an episode the other day, because it's like I have not seen this in 20 years. I'm actually going to just sit in this. But it's that kind of thing where, like, everybody's acting, like, overacting.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, I'm going to fall over. And I don't mean like the bits that are filmed, like, in Japan or whatever, where they're sort of, it's all quite, like you say, delightfully kind of camp and it all goes together. But it's the American bits where everyone's just terrible. And they play the music, and it's kind of like, it's like, oh, something funny's happening. So they'll go, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, it's just so, it's so horrible. Like, I feel manipulated by it. Like, I feel like it's going, this is a funny moment. You will laugh now. And it's kind of like, no, I hate everything that's happening.
It's a very odd mashup, taking like the kind of disparate elements of both shows. And kind of like, I'm pretty sure the Japanese, the Super Sentai, was never had the same tone as the US one. I think they've changed. They've slightly matured a little, but kind of that first series is just kind of, it's like an American high school drama, and then it cuts into them beating fuck out of people and giant robots.
Yes.
From like buildings get blown up, and then Angel grows fine. It's like, oh, that 20-story building came down. That's okay. Just go back to school.
No one messes with the juice bar in my town. No. That's the main message and theme, I think, for Power Rangers. Power Rangers Juice Force, I think, is the next show that's coming. So that also sounds like the porn version, doesn't it?
Oh dear God.
Back to robot sex.
Yes.
Playing my magic flute.
That's never going to go away.
Do you feel like the idea of kind of like man-machine stuff and transhuman, I find that a lot more interesting than the people piling it. I think there's a chance.
Yeah.
But generally I find that approach more interesting. We've got like, for instance, the, was it Pacific Rim? Is that the new one coming out of that?
Yeah. I think that's next year, isn't it? The next one.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Yeah. I do really like Pacific Rim.
See, I was not a fan of Pacific Rim. But not because of the robots.
It was the people.
But there's a great GIF which summarizes this for me, which is just about the two of them getting in to do their, you know, they've got a drift. And you see them getting ready and suited up, and then the GIF just cuts to a cat walking on its legs. Now, unfortunately for me, that's what the film feels like. It's really weird about the two of them having to be together, and that the logic of the film doesn't like hang together, because they're like, oh, it's really rare that you can have two people that can do this. And then, like, at the end of the film, they're like, oh, sod it, let's just have Idris Elba and that kid, and we never worked together, but everything's fine. You're like, well, wasn't there a whole... What, wasn't, like...
Stop pointing out plot holes I never thought about before.
Oh, I think the best bit's that fucking sword.
Like, oh, that sword was awesome.
Just sorts him out. And so, oh, let's not deploy that, though, till, like, two-thirds away from the film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a movie, isn't it? You need movie moments.
Yeah, I guess so. If they said, oh, we've got an experimental weapon, try this.
Yeah,
and then the sword popped out, that's sorted.
It's what I call the Voyager effect, which is you have 42 minutes of peril, and then someone goes, if we inverse the tachyon field to send a inverse pulse into the heart of the star, then we should shake us free.
I've just started watching Voyager from the beginning, and this is so on point. Absolutely so on point.
It's literally, that's how every problem is resolved in like 170 out of 176 episodes. It's literally that. I hate it when stuff comes from nowhere. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just saying, don't we all?
Yes. It came from nowhere. It came from behind.
Oh, so taking it back to Transformers, I remember going to see the original film, mm-hmm. and that was just an absolute hammer blow seeing like Optimus dying. Because I was a massive fan of comics.
Spoilers.
Was that like 1980 something?
1987. Was it 7? Oh.
I think it was 7. It might be 1986. It might have been like Christmas 86, something like that. It was. Yeah. In fact, it was 86, because I think, it was two seasons of the show, then the cartoon, and then we had Rodimus Co.
Yeah. I had the toy of Hot Rod before I actually saw the Transformers movie. So Transformers is an interesting one, because you sort of attach yourself to individual characters, I think. Sometimes just based on how cool they look. You know, you can have a cool robot or a cool car and you're like, God, he's my favourite. And then when you watch a cartoon and that character pops up for 5 minutes, immediately like you're just totally buzzing. You're like, oh my God. So when
like
I watched... So when I watched the Transformers movie and Hot Rod was essentially the main one, it kind of blew my mind. I was like, that cool toy I had for ages is now like one of the head Transformers. Although I preferred him as Hot Rod rather than Rodimus Prime. I thought he was a bit of a pussy when he was Rodimus Prime.
No, the movie set him up to be like, this guy's going to be the baddest ass of them all.
Yeah.
And then literally the first episode of the cartoon is like, I don't want to go outside. It's snowing and my leg hurts and my mummy cooked a meal and made me sick. It's like he's just a really whiny. He's terrible. The comics, he's brilliant. He's actually really good in the comic. Completely different thing. But in terms of favorite characters, and then seeing him in the movie, one of my absolute favorites was Wheeljack, because all of his livery, everything on him is Italian. I'm half Italian, so as a kid, seeing like you know red, white, and green on a car and Alitalia and all that kind of stuff on that was brilliant. He's a Lancia, again brilliant. And he's an engineer, and I kind of like engineers and builders and that kind of stuff. And I don't know how many times I watched Transformers the movie, and then suddenly noticed that his corpse is lying on the ground.
Yeah.
In Autobot City, it's like what? So rewound it like freeze frame, frame by frame. I was like, you've just killed off my favorite character. He didn't even get a death scene.
Off panel. Yeah.
At least Prowl got to billow some smoke from his eyes and mouth before he died. You know, even Ratchet got to fire a couple of rapid guns and stuff. But no, Wheeljack, he's dead. He's dead. Get over it, kids, you bastard.
The problem with that was that Hot Rod essentially cost Optimus Prime died because of him. And I always found out the viewer kind of like really couldn't really get back on board with him after that. It's like you just killed Prime. Can't really let that slide.
No, it's quite. It is. In fairness, it's quite hard to get over that. But yes, but luckily, every kid took Rodimus to their hearts afterwards. And...
Yeah. And they brought back Prime. Well, right at the end of the credits, they say, "Don't worry, Optimus Prime will return." Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry, kids. The toy line's only temporary.
Yeah. Death isn't forever.
No. Not with robots.
So it's like the comics, really, isn't it? If you think about that. Yeah. Transformers was a pretty dark one. I mean, like you say, in that movie. It's one of the rare sort of older animated movies that still holds up for me personally. I could still watch that now. I also really liked the G.I. Joe movie when it came out. I absolutely adored it. I can't watch that now.
That's really aged badly.
That's dated really, really badly.
Yeah, I've still never seen it. I've got it on DVD and I've still never watched it. The amazing opening song, obviously.
Yeah.
But I spent I was at New York Comic Con and I was sat there with Michael Bell, who does Duke, and obviously he did Prowl and different people. And I thought, I really must watch this because I feel like I'm letting him down by not having watched it, and I still haven't watched it like 7 years later. So sorry, Michael.
You're still letting him down.
Fuck with the concept, don't they? In the film, they got like the Cobra cult that comes along. There's a bit supernatural elements, and you're like,
and then,
whoa.
Yeah, you've got weird sort of mutant sort of underground people, and it's all about...
Oh, it's like this is supposed to be sort of quasi-militaristic.
Yeah, when you're a kid, it's amazing, and it's like, big ideas, but it doesn't age so well. Unlike Transformers, which...
Well, I say the comics were really good in the fact that they tried to kind of keep kind of coherent running storylines, and then like they had the film come along, and then they'd have to change what they were doing and adapt to that. I was always a really big fan of the comics. The UK ones. Did the UK ones reprint some US ones as well?
Are we talking Transformers or
Transformers? Sorry.
Yeah. No. Well, they were basically the UK comic ran for like 320 odd issues, and the US one ran for about 80.
Okay.
So they printed all of the US content, but then they also had their own stuff that kind of sat alongside it, and then when Transformers the movie came out, the UK stopped trying to write stories that fit in with the US, and they just completely wrote the stories from 2005. So they followed the future cast. I've got to get the future. It's like 12 years ago. The future cast. And until Simon Furman, the writer, basically the US book was started to be written by him, and then. The storylines kind of the US became the main storyline again, but no, the comics were amazing because there was a mythology to the Transformers, so there was like a creation myth, and that kind of stuff. There were amazing time travel kind of stories. There was so much science fiction in it. There was so much like drama in it. There was genuinely like shocking moments as well, and some horrible moments, and they kind of did a zombie kind of little arc.
I remember that one quite vividly. That was a really amazing stand-up point. Was it the City of Canis or Talis or something? I can't remember.
I think it was, it was called City of Fear was the name of it. I can't remember what the name of the city was. I think it was, yeah, I want to say it's either Canis or Tanis, something like that. I mean, the Transformers comics made me want to work in comics, but I wanted to be a storyteller because of the effect that Transformers comics had on me as a kid. More so that, I mean, I was reading Spider-Man and X-Men and Real Ghostbusters and He-Man and, lots, but for some reason that was the one that really made me think, ooh, yeah, this reading this particular story has made me go, I don't know, maybe feel different somehow, and I really want somebody else to read something I've read and have that feeling. So that was kind of the moment in my head. I was like, I don't know if it's going to be writing or drawing or what the thing might be, but I want to tell stories. And that's why I think why Transformers transcends like a guy in a suit for me, just because... That kind of nuance was, I mean, yeah, I've always liked androids, and you know, I love like Terminator, and I love Data in Star Trek Next Generation and that kind of stuff. Like, but there's something, there's got to be sentience. There's got to be some sort of, you know, it's like, what is life like through something non-human's eyes? Yeah. I think that for me is like, other stuff looks cool, but I like the depth of, you know, of that.
It's like, if you have like characters controlling them or piloting them and stuff, those characters have to be likeable, doesn't it? It's almost like the focus has to be more on the way those people develop rather than the actual robot. Yeah. Or what it becomes. I mean, I haven't watched all of it. I've only seen the first couple, but the Voltron series that's on Netflix.
Oh yeah.
Looks great, looks fantastic, but because it's so much about the people, you my brain was kind of thinking as it was going, come on, just get to the robots, come on, just get to the robots, I just want to see the robots.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a likable group of characters, and I've heard that series is really good, but you know, if I think they all have to be likable, and you're normally looking at how many in a, is it five with something like that, or Power Rangers or something?
Yeah.
There's always a group, isn't it? Isn't it like the two arms, the two legs, and then someone is its arse?
Yeah. Let's get the raw deal with the arse.
But all of those five characters, I think, have to be likable, and they always kind of ruin it by having one comedy relief one that is slightly over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Maybe the grumpy old man in me, but I've got less tolerance for really tacked on comedy relief these days.
There is that trope, isn't there? Like, if you have the team of the five, all the different kind of personalities you got to have in it, and most of the time they're always kind of...
They're always clumsy, though, right? Present. These people are always fucking clumsy. And I don't know about you, but if I've got... if I'm a giant robot that's controlled by four other people, and the clumsy one is controlling the left arm... You'd be fucking terrified, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I think more so with the left leg. I think, because you'd be falling over a lot, wouldn't you? You'd be,
yeah.
At least you could just keep punching whilst you've got one floppy arm. But if you've got one floppy leg, I think you're basically... You're going to lose that battle, yeah. I think, if you're kind of...
It stops... I mean, I hate to use the word realistic, because these things are all nonsensical if you think about it. But...
I refuse to think about it. I will remain... I demand ignorance.
But, you know, having someone that really is clumsy and silly, and then you're supposed to believe that they can control this sort of robot really well, and the robot's like... Mm-hmm. You know, you have to then write in some sort of backdoor, haven't you? For why...
Back to sex again.
You're back to sex. Always write in a backdoor, folks.
Yeah.
Smash it in.
Right in her back door.
But you do have to sort of factor in, why is this robot actually really good if this idiot is controlling it? You know. So
yeah,
I think I'm with
it
you.
Depends how that's handled. I can handle the character who's kind of a bit clumsy and dim, and then kind of works through that and becomes. But like, a lot of the time, they do what you say, and just they're forever dumb and
yeah.
Some crazy shit's happening there. Make an off-the-wall joke that's not funny whatsoever.
Yeah.
See, this isn't a robot. This isn't a robot thing, but in Turtles, one of the things about Michelangelo, because I was writing a comic for that before the cartoon came out. It might have just come out, but in a lot of the stuff that it said about Michelangelo was obviously, you know, in the new cartoon, he is a bit of a, you know, an idiot in a way, and he's clumsy and whatever, but one of the things they said was that because his weapon is the nunchucks. And it actually said whilst he might be quite carefree and jokey and doesn't take a lot of things seriously, the nunchuck is actually one of the hardest weapons to master, so he's actually quite like it sort of redeems him in a way.
Yeah,
to sort of say like he's actually quite like he's got it's actually quite a skill to be able to use nunchucks with some level of competence. So even though he's all these other things, he is also this.
Yeah,
and I quite liked that in terms of, you know, like I said, it's about the realism of it. Yes, it's a mutant turtle.
Yeah,
you know, yes, that's nonsense, but it's the fact. It's exactly as you say. But if you had someone like that in your group, like, would you want you'd kind of go actually no, let's get someone else because. Dave down the road, he's brilliant with machines. Yeah. You know, it's the Three Ninja Turtles and Dave he delivers the pizzas. Really good. He drives the van really carefully, so he might as well pilot the fourth leg. You know. So, but there's got to be logic to it, and
definitely,
yeah.
Have you making him like the comedy sidekick that doesn't do anything useful and just gets him into trouble all the time? As soon as they yes. take him down that avenue, you kind of you fuck them over, really.
Comedy, yeah. Fuck them over.
But like with yeah. the kind of Michelangelo character in the TV series, I think they had it right for a while, and then because my son watches some of it, and then I've only seen more the recent stuff, and he's just generally screwing up all the time. So okay, fair enough.
It's sort of, I like the idea of someone who's like really fun. You know, you can have that comedy character, and they're really funny, mm. but when it comes to like being good at something, it's almost like a switch hits, and they know. They can do their job, if you know what I mean. That doesn't mean that they don't joke about, but you know, yeah. I just like to I like to think my heroes are competent. If that makes sense.
but also complex, because even if you've got someone who's a joker or a you know a not very good or whatever. I mean, it's like I know everyone hates like Snarf and Orko. I mean, Orko is one of those characters who is complete incompetent and only gets in trouble. But Snarf's one of those ones who sort of. He gets himself into trouble in a way, but he's so like because he's not very strong or anything, but he is actually his heart's in the right place. He's always like he will try and get him like save people because he's like oh, I'll save you, and then he gets hurt because he's rubbish. But he's you know it, but it's kind of like I always felt the Snarf.
Yeah.
I always liked the sidekick. Oddly enough, as a kid, I always liked all the what I would describe as the characters everybody else like just basically hates, like Orko and Snarf and all of those. Which is like, you know, I had a Snarf toy. It's actually the only Thunder guy I owned was Snarf.
Oh my god!
Which I know. I literally know how. But it's just one of those things where like you can be done like well. Yeah. And I think Transformers. Didn't really have. I mean, I had Bumblebee, who was kind of like the everyman kind of character, you know, who maybe got into a bit more trouble, but not because he was like a foolish.
They had a little bit with Grimlock later on.
Yeah, that was the only thing I really like the Dinobots. That. I mean, for instance, one of them's called Slag. You got to love that.
Yeah,
but
now he's called Slug.
Oh no! Exactly. Really?
Yeah, I know. I'm genuinely saddened by that.
Oh. Yeah. God, oh, that's really upset me.
I know.
But when they turned up, I mean, for instance, when they're in the movie, you know that these guys are like they're hard cases. You know, when the Dinobots turn up, it's like shit's going to get real, and like it's awesome. But then they kind of become this stupid, like a bunch of idiots.
Yeah, it's one of the things because I read the comics more so than had access to the cartoons, and that's the one thing that really disappoints me when I see the cartoon. Because Grimlock in the comics is a badass who is at least Prime's equal in strength. Mm. And he is, like, his problem is really his arrogance more than his stupidity. Like, he doesn't want to kind of admit that Prime is actually, like, a good leader. He doesn't want to admit, you know, there's certain things he's just too prideful about, and he makes mistakes on the basis of that. But actually, like, Grimlock is a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I can remember getting a copy of one of the cartoons on tape where Grimlock is in dinosaur mode, wearing a pinny and serving drinks at a party, and I'm kind of there going, I can't, this isn't what. Don't it hurts us. It's like staring at the sun. It was just like this. Looking at this just makes. All my vision go away forever.
But those kind of joke characters, when they're the kind of the voice of reason, like with Snarf and Lino saying, "Let's go into this abandoned crypt," and they're like, "No, no,
yeah, no, exactly."
That's crazy.
Yeah,
and it's like, yeah, we can really attest to that. Like, listen to Snarf, because even he's being cowardly, he's like, that's what the readers or the viewers would be thinking.
I want that as a T-shirt. Listen to Snarf. That would just be the best.
Or just let's not go in the crypt.
Yeah.
great tea. Just advice for life. Yeah. In fact, put it on a tombstone because that would really creep everyone out, I would have thought. His last words were don't go in the crypt.
Yeah.
There was always the emotional problems of Lino. They never really tackled the fact that he was a teenager and then next minute he's a grown man.
I know.
And also,
there are development issues there.
I think in terms of like main heroes for things, Lino is one of the least likable. I see what it did. Yeah, nice. Yeah. Oh, God. But he's one of the least likable. You kind of like all the other Thundercats better than you like Lino. Does that make sense?
I think the thing is, A, he sort of wears a lady's sports bra bikini type thing.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird design.
Which I just, it makes me feel strangely uncomfortable the whole time. I think as well, the fact that he has a tiny... Right, here's the thing. Okay, he's got a tiny sword... Right, and its main power, if he says a chant, is the sword gets bigger. Now, not only is that a weird penis metaphor I'm really uncomfortable with, but, like, what is the point of having a sword that goes small in the first place?
Plus, he screams the word ho when it does.
Yeah, I know, and summons Chitara every time.
And he's got an eye on the sword.
I know.
Oh my God, this is blowing my mind.
I know. I'm gonna have to refer to a certain part of my body now as the Eye of Thundera, just to... wouldn't that make a great tattoo? Oh my God. Just tattoo the helmet red and a nice black helmet, mate.
To be fair, the reboot cartoon, I've only seen like a couple of episodes of that, but that seemed to have a better kind of grasp on it.
I've got to tell you that the reboot was brilliant.
Yeah,
really, really good. A lot of people didn't take to. I thought it was fantastic. Really, really.
But they seem to sort of like, okay, we've got this concept. Let's kind of shape it up a bit. Mm. And I think they did a better job.
I think with a lot of those things. I mean, certainly like He-Man as well. I mean, I love the classics, but the basis is there to do some cool redesigns or to do something that you know, is a bit more modern. Whereas I think for me, something like Transformers. I love the older ones. I love the way they look, you know, the way they're drawn and the way they're chunkier, you know. I was never a fan of, like, is it Beast Wars?
Beast Wars, yeah.
The CGI stuff.
Yeah. I would describe myself as a person who's slow to change. That's why I'm calling you from my 1998
Nokia
Dell PC. on my AOL 50 hours free dial-up. But Beast Wars was one of those things. I saw it and I thought, oh, he's called Optimus Prime. All rubbish. And was very like against it as a notion. And because I like them as, you know, I like, as a kid I love toy cars and I love robots, and so the fact this was both was just mind blowing and perfect. But I never thought I really want to own a toy gorilla.
Yeah.
But when I actually I saw one episode of Beast Wars, and the thing was, what I didn't realize, I thought, oh, I'm not going to like this because it's really disrespectful of the original. And actually, when I watched the cartoon, it's so respectful of the original that I couldn't hate it. And it's mind-blowingly good. The Beast Wars, for me, is the best cartoon Transformers they've ever done.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the CGI obviously is a bit hokey, but it was amazing at the time. But the storytelling and everything is perfect. And it ties in literally the stories of G1 and it overlap. And you realize that the whole crux of the show becomes about preventing the Beast Wars Megatron, who's not the same Megatron, he just took his name from that guy, stopping him from going effectively from destroying the Autobots. You remember the first episode of Transformers, the Ark crashes into the volcano. You find out that Beast Wars, the events of Beast Wars are set after that, but they end up going back in time and they're on Earth and the Ark is in the volcano still dormant, waiting for 4 million years before they all get woken up. And so the whole thing becomes about preventing the Predacons from destroying the Autobots, because if they destroy the Autobots in the past, then the Decepticons win and the whole timeline's ripped apart. So you literally see like a CGI G1 Optimus Prime unconscious in his chair as he was in the first episode of the cartoon from 1984, and I'm just like there going, this is so good! This is so good! Thank you for honouring the thing I love! And it just made me... And it just, the way it all ties in together and calls back and moves forward and backward is really, really good. But I can understand... I've got no problem with people who kind of go, oh, I don't like it, or it just didn't ring true to me. Because it didn't to me. But I absolutely... I I love it now. I still think the G1 look, the G1 aesthetic, the G1 toys are cooler toys. Mm. And I do like the modernized versions where they've sort of, like the Masterpiece toys I collect, and the sort of the Generations toys where they sort of, it's the old toy kind of, but it look, you know, it's modernized, but it's not like the Transformers, the Michael Bay style.
Thousand
polygon type ones.
Brian Vander had shown one off on Twitter. He had like the G1 Megatron in one of those editions, and it looks fantastic.
Sadly, it's the only one I don't have because it's really expensive. But I keep looking at other people's photos and wanting to attack the screen to try and pull it out somehow.
Because my dad's got a story when they first came out and the Transformers were big. My brother wanted Optimus and I wanted Megatron, and he got Optimus within days, and it took him weeks, right up to the last week of Christmas, to track down a Megatron. I got it in the end.
Nice.
What other robots from Transformers turned into something absolutely tiny? Because Megatron basically turned into a handgun, didn't he?
Yeah. Soundwave turned into a tape player.
Yeah.
Blaster was a ghetto blaster.
Yeah. The cassettes, obviously.
Yeah.
A Perceptor were turned into a microscope.
Yeah, I don't know if he... Did he ever turn into a microscope that people could use, or did he turn into, like, a massive microscope that... I can't remember if I ever saw him shrink, but in theory, yes, he would have been.
They've got that size thing going on, haven't they? They can kind of...
Yes, the mass shifting, yes.
What's the reason... I was just about to ask what the reason for the size difference is.
The reason is needing an explanation for the toy to make sense. In the show, I mean, it's like if you were the head of a villainous organization, the one thing you wouldn't do is transform into an immobile, motionless gun to lie on that somebody else has to use. It's sort of,
yeah.
It was because in the beginning they, I think a lot of the toy, it was two toy lines that they kind of brought together to make Transformers, and one set was like cars and planes, and one set was where they were meant to be massive and people went inside them, and then the other line was literally things that would fit in a human being's hand. And they merged the two toy lines together, which is why there's that weird mismatch of, oh no, it's a juggernaut versus a gun, who's going to win?
Because that's kind of echoed in that Small Soldiers film when you got the two toy lines and they kind of just, right, okay, one's a good guy, one's a bad guy.
Yeah.
And away they go.
Yes. They don't make any sense together as a group.
No.
There they are. So there's... I'm trying to think. They're definitely... There were the three robots that combined to form one camera.
Oh, God, yeah, I remember that one.
Which, again, is even more... what do you turn into? Oh, I turn into, a flash bulb.
Yeah.
Right.
Why does a robot need a camera?
These are all good questions that I have no answers for.
Well, in modern days, it'd just be for Instagram accounts, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Filter gone.
Shit.
Yeah. In fact, it would just be the red filter that you used to put, you know, the little red slip of film you put over the tech specs at the back.
Yeah.
That's just all it would be. Switch on the red filter. Your strength's about 5, I'm minus 6, I'll kick your ass.
They're still going, aren't they? Like the toy lines. I think they're kind of on there. Well, the ones I saw the other day was on the TV. Literally, you just kind of twist it and it turns into a robot, which is kind of losing the fun of it.
Well, they do. What they do is they do like these ones. They're called like step change or something, which are literally designed for babies, pretty much. Where you either one or a handful of switches and they turn into something else. But then they go all the way like the masterpieces. Some of them you think you need a degree in engineering to figure out what the hell is going on, because they're so... I remember once that there was a toy line called Robots in Disguise, not the recent ones, but like 2000, I think. And there was this toy, there were these two toys, it was Optimus Prime and Ultra Magnus, and they combined to form this massive robot, I think called Omega Prime or something. And I swear to almighty God, the back of the packet had a scale of like 1 to 5 in terms of how difficult it was to transform. and it was a 3, and I was like, okay, fine. I have never, ever struggled as hard. I've done a master's degree, and I'm there going, it was easier to do a master's than it was to try and figure out the transformation for this son of a bitch. And I'm looking at, I'm there looking at, this is a 3. You'd have to have the many arms of Vishnu to do something that was a 5. Like, I can't, it's just, how would you do this? I mean, I know kids basically, I mean, like, you probably hand it to a you know, like a 4-year-old, and they would just figure it out without having to look at the instructions. But like, I swear I don't have to, like, a lot of my friends who are into Transformers, like, they open the box and they just start transforming it without, like, reading the instructions.
Yeah.
And I was at a convention, Transformers convention, called Roll Out Roll Call last summer, and I had an Optimus Prime toy, newish version, and I'm there, like, transforming it, and I'm looking at the instructions, and everyone's looking at me with abject horror. Like, who is this imposter amongst us fans? And I'm like, I'm scared I'll break it. I've broken toys before as a kid. I've, like, snapped bits, like, properly snapped it, because I just wanted to figure it out without the instructions. And I think, I swear it makes me not a true Transformers fan, because I'm too scared to try and transform it without looking at the instructions. So,
well, you're entrenched with Transformers now. You can't get away from it. So I think you're okay. I think you're safe.
Yeah,
I hope so. I definitely felt like I lost some cred at that point. But, you know, it's fine.
I said, bring it back around to the comics. I was a massive fan of Masamune and Shiro. Not so much the more kind of recent stuff, which is essentially he just does pin-ups of semi-naked women all the time. Well, not even semi-naked, virtually fully naked women.
Yeah.
But kind of like his initial kind of... mech design, landmate design on the series Appleseed.
Oh, yeah.
Took massive inspiration from that, like the big chunky robots. And again, like, that was very much all that tech was great and the big robots are great, but it was about the people inside them, and that was more the drama, and they were more like, it was more like picking up a gun or a weapon.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much kind of, oh, we've got to run and get in the robots first thing we do. I always found that series and everything about it really, really great.
I mean, aesthetically, that's fantastic, and you can see the influence that that's had for years.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, and even things like, you know, Metal Gear Solid and things like that, you have these sort of mech designs. Then it becomes mech, doesn't it, really, rather than, you know.
Yes.
In order for it to be a robot, do you think it has to have some sort of sentience? Do you know what I mean? It has to have a brain, for want of a better word.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think it's going to have some. I mean, because would you class Iron Man's armor as? It's not a robot, is it? Whereas, I mean, but yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? Because anything that's designed to resemble a human is an android. But most robots sort of look kind of human-y in a way.
Yeah.
So I mean, the Vision is technically an android, but he doesn't look. That, I mean, he's obviously got 2 arms, 2 legs, but you wouldn't walk into a room and go, "Oh, is he a person?" Oh, it's hard to tell.
he looks like Paul Bettany.
he does look a lot from hit film Wimbledon.
starring Kirsten Dunst.
Yes, Mary Jane and the Vision together at last. It's when you start watching, because have you seen Old Boy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the US version.
I haven't seen that one. The Josh Brolin.
Yeah, because Josh Brolin's in it, and also Elizabeth Olsen, aka Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
And of course, then you start getting into this weird thing with Thanos and Scarlet Witch having a bit of a thing going on.
Well, he's Cable as well now. That boy's.
I know.
He's got quite a CV, old Brolin.
Do they have the same twist in the US Old Boy than they do with the original?
They do. The ending is different, but the twist is the same, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. I have to say, I'd never seen the original, and I kind of wish I'd never seen the remake. It's so horrible. They genuinely make it even worse somehow in the... Because I was telling... My wife was a huge fan of the original, and she was telling me about that, and I was like, no, it's weirdly more nihilistic and dark in the US version.
Okay.
It's even more hopeless or hope bereft at the end somehow.
Like this show, really, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
No hesitation. Yep.
No. Yeah, there's a suicide pact at the end, right? Isn't that how this works?
Yes, totally.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
We let the guests do it first, and then we join them afterwards.
Wise.
That'll ploy.
Yeah.
It probably would have been better if there were some robots in it, don't you think?
What, in Old Boy?
In Old Boy.
Yeah.
Old Bot. Oh, no, that sounds a bit...
I think Bot Boy sounds worse somehow. I don't know. Botty Boy. I don't know. Something...
kind of the definite kind of robots and Transformers, the kind of the East has got that down pat more than the West. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of I try not to be too down on like people who write like Slash, but there are some people who put an awful lot of effort into like drawing humanized versions of Transformers with erect penises.
Oh, okay.
And like having sex with each other and stuff, and it's just kind of like, oh look, there's, and things the people artistically have some talent. And I'm kind of going, so you've drawn a human sort of humanish version of Scorponok with an erect penis being sucked off by a human.
Oh,
version
Scorponok! What a choice. Oh,
I know. Yeah. But it's just, you know, I mean, there's a lot of Starscream. You'd expect there to be a lot of Starscream, and Megatron being in there.
I always find it odd that kind of see some of that kind of artwork and you think this person has got a lot of talent. I mean, if they're just doing this for their own kind of kicks, whatever, but you could be earning fucking money doing this.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a dangerous tangent to go down, but I have, now we're on a weird direction, I have to go down this.
Go it, do it, let's go.
It's worse than robot sex. There's this weird online thing of people drawing dragons having sex with cars.
Okay.
Okay. How long have you been doing this then, JP?
Well, I actually have made people draw me pictures of mythical beasts having sex with mechanical objects. as was a friend of mine drew me a unicorn having sex with a fridge, and stuff. Just which I keep meaning to colour, but weirdly enough, there's never enough time in the day. But honestly, God, some of these pictures are like they're beautifully rendered. But it's literally there's one that is like a silhouette of a dragon having sex with a school bus, whilst stood on the edge of a cliff as the sun sets, and like its seed spilling out the end of the bus. And I'm assuming the bus isn't occupied. I've got to put that out there. But it's kind of, I'm just there like going now, and I often think like on that person's, when that person dies. And they get to the pearly gates and they have to account for their time on Earth. And Peter's going to be there, or Paul, whoever. So they're going, okay, so, you know, you did these good deeds and you gave money to charity. Great. That's great. And you did some of these bad things. That's not great. You know, so you did that. And yeah. And you spent 17 hours drawing a dragon having sex with a school bus? What? Just forget all the others. Just let's go through this for a minute. Just why? what? I mean, I really feel like I can't let you in until I know what the hell this is about. But it's I just don't understand it. But it's there.
And beautifully rendered.
Some of them are beautiful. There's one of like a muscle car, and there's two dragons sort of taking the car from either end. And one of them's like hunched over the bonnet, licking it, whilst the other one's having sex with the exhaust pipe.
Now, Dan, what do you think? Do you think we should ask some of the listeners to draw?
No.
I think the best submission of a mythical animal having sex with a mechanical device should win a prize. That prize will be the envy of all their friends.
Yeah. Can you imagine, though, if you had fallen asleep on that bus and you were the last person on it?
Yeah.
That
would have been... What a way to go.
You'd definitely have a rude awakening. Well, you'd be blasted out the end of the bus.
It was a school bus, though. So it's horrific.
It was a yellow school bus. Yeah. That's so...
that makes it disgusting.
Yeah, that does. Yeah.
Too far.
It's sorry, though, the sun was setting, so I'm fearing the school bus should have been empty.
Yeah. Thank heavens.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to... I don't think I'd want to get back on the bus the following day, though, if I'm honest. But
well, to be honest, if a dragon's been doing it, I don't think the bus is going to be much good, is it? I don't know.
I've not dealt with the realities of bus sex. See, what if that bus was a transformer? I mean, then it all comes full circle.
Oh my god! Is there a transformer that's a bus?
No, there isn't. No, I had suddenly thought maybe there was. No, there isn't. There isn't one that's a bus.
Oh, there is one
that's with a dragon. So, again,
Is that one of the later ideas though?
Skylinks, is that one? That was a sort of.
Yeah. No, there were a few like dragons or dragony type ones over the years, but none that were a bus. I love how they thought, should we do a bus? No, let's do a dragon first. All right, okay.
Yeah. Blend in on Earth by having a dragon.
You know, we're in disguise. Dragon, bus? No, dragon. Let's have a dragon.
It's purely because kids are going to be more like, sort of say, I've got a dragon robot rather than this one turns into a bus.
Bus, yeah. It's like in Big, where they have the toy line of the buildings that turn into robots.
Oh, yeah.
So he wants to play over a building.
Yeah, shit idea.
Yeah.
So I'm literally looking at my Fortress Maximus, who turns into a city. So, just saying.
That does have loads of guns and shit over it. So
that's true. Oh yeah. No, I mean, if the Empire State was full of guns, I mean, definitely that would make a difference.
Isn't he classed as a base as well? It's a base.
He's a base. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Whatever,
kids
nerds.
Love bases. Kids love bases.
They do love bases.
They do.
Yeah.
You've got to have some bass. It's all about the bass.
Chocolate biscuit bass.
Oh, I love that tune. Anyway. Now, in terms of other sort of giant robots and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about the GoBots?
GoBots kind of passed me by, to be honest. I very much didn't really have any access to them, the cartoon or the toys, so... I'd see a couple of friends that had GoBots instead of Transformers, and I'm like, that's not Bumblebee, I don't know what the fuck that is.
Yeah.
And the aesthetic was so different that I'd just be like, no, get it out of my face. You're weird and you're wrong. It's not Optimus Prime. I don't actually think GoBots are that bad. Rock Lords are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a robot and I turn into a rock. Okay. Well, right. You're pointless.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've said that specifically because I know it'll irritate a friend of mine who keeps trying to convince me that they're brilliant, but they're not.
Tony would have mentioned one, the Shogun Warriors. I mean, that was based on a toy line in the 1970s, and I got no recollection of that one since I was born in the late 70s.
It's funny you should mention Tony, actually.
What do you mean I like robot dongs?
Hey, yes! Hey. Tony Esmond is actually here. He's popped in. To see us, haven't you, Tony?
It transforms into a sort of medium-sized dong.
And as you can see, he's already in the same mood that the rest of us are. So
has it been going badly then, is it? Good, I knew as soon as I heard John Paul was on the show, it'd go badly. You said that already. Are we recording now, or...?
it's been a disaster entirely of my making, and I'm not ashamed to say that.
Good to
I'm
know.
I'm a terrible human being that ruins everything it touches.
No change.
Interesting to hear Tony's thoughts on the sequence that preceded this.
Yes.
Should be interesting.
It's going to be interesting to hear.
Yeah.
But you've come in at just the right time, Tony. Because Dan just brought up Shogun Warriors. So, and I know
what's wrong with you not knowing what they are?
None of us really do. But this is one that you could sort of say came before everything that we've just been talking about.
Well, I suppose, but I mean, everything comes from Japan, doesn't it? I suppose. Is that right? I'm not a big robot fan myself, but
Not everything comes from Japan. Italians don't. You're just swinging wild now. You're making stuff. Just got to be more precise.
Don't be a Brexit hater.
Don't get them on the politics again.
Well, yeah.
Don't get them on the
facts get in the way.
That's politics for you.
So Shogun Warriors. Go on, Tony. Enlighten us with your knowledge.
Shogun Warriors ran from 1979 to 1981. There you go. So long before anyone was born.
I was born kind of in the middle of that.
Were you?
Yeah.
Okay.
1980.
Were you?
1980 as well, yeah.
Really?
Why do you sound so surprised?
I know I look youthful, but...
No, I'm 77, so...
Yeah.
Well, you don't look it, Dan. You look bloody good for that age.
You're the youngest amongst us, I think.
Thanks.
Thank you. that's fine.
No, yeah. it was written by Doug Mensch and art by Herb Trimpey, but it came from, like, loads of different mismatched imported sort of Japanese toys. I think it was Mattel. Is that a toy line?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Better than me.
Here's the little bit of info. Yeah. Here's a little bit of info. I didn't realise this, but I had one of the toys.
Did you?
I did. It was one of my favourite toys when I was a little kid growing up. It was, what was his name?
Is it there's three of them, Raiden, Combatra, and Dagand Ace.
Who's the one with the, is almost got like blades sticking out the side of his head and almost looks a little bit Egyptian in his face?
I know the one. Yeah, I think that might be Raiden. I think so.
Yeah.
Did it sort of fire off a missile from his hand?
Yeah, I think his hand sort of came off.
Ooh. Yeah, I think that's the one. It's hard to remember. But yeah. There was all... I think these robots all came from, like, different series, didn't they? There was... Is it Starbirds a series and Force 5 a TV series in Japan and all that sort of thing? And they sort of cherry-picked three robots. And there were sort of three robots that had pilots, if you see what I mean. So Richard Carson, he flew Raiden. He was a stuntman. Of course he was. Combatra was, I think, Ginju Adashu, who was a Japanese test pilot, and Dagand Ace was Ilongo Savage, who was an oceanographer. I'm not sure why.
What a name! What a name! Ilongo, yeah. Oh, amazing!
I called my third born child that.
Ilongo,
Ilongo Savage, Esmond.
Ilongo Savage.
Also, his initials would just be Is Esmond.
Yeah. Oh. That's it. I'm off now. I'm gone. I'm done. That's all I needed. You thought I was going in as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
But it was a sort of... we didn't really see much like that. Because there wasn't that much sort of manga or anime in the UK at the time. Or very, very little. You know, you had Battle of the Planets and a couple of other things. Mm. And this was sort of... quite cool, and I was a big fan of Doug Mensch, as I've talked about incessantly on the show, and I'm also a big fan of Herb Trimpey as well, who brings that sort of Bronze Age Kirby feel to it, you know. And some of the creatures they fought were just like fucking mental, you know, like real sort of acid trips of monsters, you know, they used to fight. And then I think Godzilla turns up in an issue, I think the Fantastic Four could turn up in an issue, so they tried to sort of stick it into the middle of the continuity of the Marvel Universe, but I think there's still rights issues, so I don't know whether it's getting reprinted.
Not really?
Sure. Yeah, I think there's one of those sort of rights issues.
That's always a bit of a killer, that, because like, they do a series and it's like, well, they never reprint this because of rights issues.
Mm. It's like ROM, isn't it? Was it Space Knight?
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And Transformers, when they... some of the reprints... because they had characters who... So, characters like Circuit Breaker, who was a human who had, like, cybernetic implants and could fire electric bolts and stuff. Because technically, she was a Marvel character, even though she first appeared in Transformers, I believe. There's literally reprints where they've had to kind of work around her and black her out.
Really?
All right. Yeah, so they've like, agreed with Marvel, yes, we'll reprint this and stuff. Because obviously the first four issues have got Spider-Man in Transformers, so...
Oh, of course, yeah.
Of course he did, yeah.
So, you know, they had to work their way around some of those things. But yeah, it's funny the way the licensed comics caused such problems later on. Because, yeah, it all crosses over... you know, to the Dickens. So yeah, it sort of depends. Although I don't think anybody's crying. I don't think anybody's trying to reprint Shogun Warriors. So they should be all right. But I don't
right,
know.
Okay.
Right. Were they grabbed from different properties though? Or was it
yeah, I think
property?
That's the thing. I think they might have been. I certainly know that the original sort of toy line was grabbed from different properties, but I'm not sure specifically where these ones. Somebody write and tell me, don't they? Where specifically each one of these was.
Yeah.
Okay. You know. Yeah, I'm guessing that it's probably a rights issue. I think I heard somewhere that it was. But you can pick up the back issues for peanuts, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're quite cheap.
It was going for a couple of years. So when it ended, did it actually have a sort of natural ending, or was it just a feeling
they killed someone off the equivalent of off screen in a comic? I've got a feeling it's a long time. I'll tell you who'd know is Matt Harrower, because I know he bought them all up recently because he loves all that sort of thing. I know he read them all, so I might ask him. I'm seeing him tomorrow, so I might have a chat with him. But I think the sales began to drop off a bit. I think towards the end, to be fair. Yeah. Herb Trimpey was probably drawing about 5 comics a month at the time.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
And of course, he did Transformers later on as well.
Oh, did he? Okay. Did
he? Yeah. So he got some practice in on these books.
The Shogun Warriors.
It's definitely one. I mean, for instance, the three of us didn't really know much about it. It wasn't until I looked at them and I suddenly realised, holy shit, one of the toys I had when I was a kid. I just thought it was a giant, because they were like a foot tall, like a foot and a half tall. They weren't like little Transformers. They were big, like solid toys. Well,
it's weird because I was just reading the Wikipedia entry and it says they came in 3 sizes and it's like 3.5 inch, 5 inch, and 24 inch. And you kind of think that's. There's really something missing there. I feel like.
Yeah,
I tell you what.
It's a massive jump.
It doesn't get small if you look at it, does it?
When I was a kid, I had a 24 incher.
And it's only got smaller since then.
Yeah, true. The rest of me grew around it.
That's true, yeah.
Now it's just turned into a Funko.
We're talking about your knob, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a knob toe.
But we've got. You'll find out a great idea for a tattoo for it later.
I got a tattoo of a massive cock on my cock.
Does it spill off the edges?
No. The old ones are the best, aren't they?
Yeah. What, cocks?
I said,
sometimes don't do them down. Yeah. 58 years old.
I mentioned it last week, but the big guy and Rusted a Robot by Jeff Darrow. Then he did one of them, I think. That's great, and that's kind of. I'm not sure if you'd be classed as a giant robot. It's like 8-9 feet tall, and it is a person in. Well, it seems like it's a consciousness put into a robot. Have you guys read that one?
I've heard about it, but I've never gotten around to reading it. It's one of those sort of blank spots in my. What is the basic story of that?
Basically, like a big monster turns up, starts this wrecking. I think it's Japan, and they call that Big Guy, and he turns up, fights him over the city, and it's done with Jeff Darrow, and it's like you get spreads of the whole city getting wiped out, and you can look in windows and see people kind of jumping and screaming. It's like fucking hell. I always really appreciated Jeff Darrow's art, but I could never. Well, I guess I could do that if you really wanted to spend hours and hours and hours working on little details.
Darrow's a beast, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a beast.
I remember one issue of... What's that monk one?
Shaolin Cowboy, is it?
Shaolin Cowboy. Where the whole issue is just Shaolin Cowboy killing zombies. And I know from an artistic... I mean, it's just double-page spreads. It's like 24 pages, double-page spreads for him just in a massive pile of zombies killing them. Now, from an artistic standpoint, that's wonderful. But if you've paid three quid for a comic, that's not much of a comic. Because there was no speech bubbles or anything. It was just a massive fight scene.
Have you ever met him? I know he was at the Thought Bubble when we were there.
Have I ever met him? No, of course not.
No, he was at the Thought Bubble, wasn't he? Were you outside with me when we chatted to him?
That wasn't me, Tony.
That wasn't you, was it? That's sad, isn't it? I took a picture of him once at New York. I said, I bought a print off him. I said, can I take a picture of you? And he says, yeah. And he called his two mates over, these two Japanese guys who didn't speak English. And then he made me take a picture of them with their fingers up their noses. Oh, he's a little bit off the wall. I'll post it on the Facebook page. It's quite funny.
Nice.
I've got the Art of the Matrix book, and he's got tons of work in that.
Yeah.
And a lot
of
that stuff is all kind of concept work that... hardly anyone sees. Well, a few more people see it if you bought the book.
Yeah.
Essentially, you're kind of working just for the production team to see it, and it's like, fucking hell. I'll just draw half one of the robots and then flip it in Photoshop, but he does all of it.
I admire your honesty.
Well, have you covered Death's Head? I think have you gone there already? Have you?
No, Death's Head. No.
What's the score with Death's Head? I don't quite understand the origin, because it's... Did he appear in a Doctor Who
freelance peacekeeping agent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where was the origin? I don't know. they said.
Well, because he's owned by Marvel, but as far as I'm aware, his first ever appearance was in Transformers, where he was hired he doesn't like the word bounty hunter, but to hunt down Rodimus. And then he sort of, so
he's essentially
just
like a
guy.
He's like a Lobo-like character, isn't he? Sort of. A robotic Lobo-like character, would that be?
Sort of sarcastic, yeah. But then doesn't he appear in Doctor Who Monthly? I got in one of the Sylvester McCoy stories.
He definitely appeared in an advert for the Doctor Who comic where he's in, it's like a one-page strip. I don't know if he actually appeared in there as well, or whether it was I don't know. I sort of, I've only kind of know some of his appearances outside of the Transformers books, really.
Yeah, because I think Simon Furman created him, didn't he?
Him and Jeff Senior sort of originated him.
The first one is the one with the big jaw, isn't it?
And there we go. Sorry, it says here a one-page strip was hastily created to establish Marvel's ownership of the character.
Oh wow!
So it was sort of a bit of a. I think realistically, it was probably a Transformers character that Marvel decided that they needed to have.
I liked, yeah.
Okay.
That was kind of at the restart of Marvel. I know this is John Freeman when he was involved in it. The restart of Marvel UK, wasn't it? When they then went into stuff like Death's Head 2 and all this sort of thing, Death Metal.
I said, sorry if you're listening, John, I hated Death's Head 2.
So did I.
Okay.
So
I
did I.
The design.
The first one was
awful.
Cracking, and then when they tried to... I mean, was it Liam Sharp that did some of the artwork for it?
Yeah,
Liam Sharp's an absolutely amazing artist, but it was a little too... I don't know, it looked a little bit too organic as well. I love the look of Death's Head 1. He just...
It's almost like a kind of predatorish.
Yeah.
It was the 90s.
There you go.
Everything had to have, like neck sinew.
Yeah.
And so I think it did. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of like Death's Head, how he went to be. And I don't know if it's just, for me, Death's Head, if it's not written by Simon Furman as well, I'm just not interested. And that's no disrespect to the talent of anybody else that touches him, but
all the wankers who've written him,
because he plays a big part in Transformers comic. There's a bit after the film like Unicron's head like comes down on the planet, and basically he's a massive part
huge.
Of that story.
It's huge, 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 absolutely, yeah. You know, Death's Head's sort of like it's got a big it is a big part of Transformers, and to me, I didn't know the difference between the rights and whatever else, but Simon Furman introduced quite a few like one-off or not even one-off, but elevated a lot of either characters that were no one into being quite prominent characters or characters that he kind of invented into being quite important, and Death's Head was one of those ones that
he pops up in Dragon's Claws, and obviously he had his own series in the
Dragon's Claws yes podcast.
Back to that again.
Get Dan Butcher doing a reboot of Dragon's Claws.
I would love to do Dragon's Claws.
Yeah.
That'd be cracking.
Well, are you guys aware of Simon and Jeff's the book that they...
This is the Kickstarted one.
Yeah.
No? Yeah, I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head.
Yes. Sorry.
Hang on now, because my mind's gone blank suddenly. Oh, To the Death. To the Death.
Right. Yeah.
It's very much in the spirit of Dragon's Claws.
Okay.
That so if you liked Dragon's Claws, then that's quite a good book to digitally follow.
Nice one. Yeah, that sounds like my cup of tea.
He does the odd convention. I think he did Leamington, not the last one, the one before, didn't he? I think.
Simon yeah does quite a few. So he's I would say like mostly doing stuff on the East Coast these days. But yeah, he's. Simon's still quite.
Is that like Great Yarmouth?
well, because he kind of lives. He used to live in London, so he kind of did everything. But he doesn't live in London anymore, so it's a bit more out of the way. So he tends to stick to one side. But
okay.
He still does quite a few. I mean, he did Bix. Is it still a bit? No. Ice and.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He did that this year when they were launching To the Death, and I can't think of the names of half the show, so but he did one a couple in Kent.
Not Demon Con. Did he do
he
that?
He does Demon Con. Yeah, he does Demon Con. Okay. And there was one because I was there as well, but the name is completely.
I think that's closed now. Demon Con, isn't it? So, the
is it?
Grinning Demon's just closed or about to close, I think.
Oh shit!
Oh no! Oh no! Yeah. I don't know anything about that. Yeah, but and of course he does. He tends to do the Transformers conventions, obviously. So.
He's a big deal in that world, isn't he? You know, he's like a superstar of that world.
Yes, he's my one of my sort of writing heroes is Simon Furman. So,
oh, cool.
I was saying to the guys earlier that the Transformers comic was kind of the point where I had a realization where I was reading the comic and something happened here, and I just thought, oh my god, this is so amazing, and it was a real rug pull moment.
Yeah.
And I thought, one day I want to write something that has this effect on somebody else.
Nice.
Or tell a story like this. And so, of course, like for me, I was kind of out of the age where I wasn't old enough to have money of my own to, like, you know, go on the internet. Or,
yeah.
But young enough where the internet wasn't really that available. And I went to uni, so it was about 1998, pretty much, before I really had access to the internet. I was looking up Transformers, because to me, Transformers is something I largely enjoyed on my own. Didn't know anybody else liked it.
Yeah.
I literally didn't know anybody else was still collecting toys or...
Like masturbation. You know. Oh, sorry.
No, I do that publicly.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I think
if you've got it, flaunt it, you know.
I think it's pre-internet, that's kind of how we all felt about comics, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I think now we're part of this sort of hive mind, aren't we, really? But we used to just ignore, you know, enjoy it in our own sort of company, didn't we, I suppose?
Mm.
Yeah.
I think that, to be honest, I mean, I still do to some extent. I find my opinions are so different to everybody else's that it's almost not worth me going online to express an opinion.
You and me both, yeah.
But Simon was coming to a convention in Bristol. Him and Andrew Wildman, who again is like a complete hero of mine, who was one of the main artists on Transformers. And I thought, oh my god, my two heroes are going to be at this show in my hometown.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I need to be able to convey to these two people how much they meant to me.
Oh no!
In less than 5 minutes, yeah. Without completely losing my mind and just doing a high-pitched wail.
Did you do it in the form of mime?
No, I probably... and I was actually quite proud of myself because I did keep it short and sweet. And I just said to them... I literally said to Simon, like, you are one of the main reasons I wanted to tell stories of my own. You know, that's the effect your work had on me. And he was like, that's the nicest thing anybody's ever said to me.
Oh, nice.
And I thought, right... Shall I keep going? I thought, no, because anything else I'm going to say basically I quit whilst I was ahead. And I just said, if I ever see you in the bar, I'll buy you a pint. And I did see him in the bar, and I did buy him a pint. And then I spoke to him for about 4 seconds and then left. Because I thought, I've done well. Let's leave it at that. And then, of course, he was there for the next couple of years. So I was lucky enough that at that point, he knew I wasn't a complete psychopath.
Rodney moment.
Modern psychopath.
Did the long con.
I hadn't told him about dragon porn at that point. I think he sort of felt a bit like, okay, this isn't going to be one of those crazy people that pins me down and I can't get away from.
I think that brings up an interesting point of how, you know, when you're at these shows and you do see your genuine big heroes,
yeah,
you know, I always struggle with it. Like, what do you say when you go up? I think what you said there is fantastic. It's short and to the point, and it is just a sense of like, thank you for the work you've done.
Yes. Yeah, there's a fine line between being that annoying weirdo and just getting across what you want to say, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, have you seen that movie Bruno? But you know, like about the model. You know the bit where he meets the ghost of Milli Vanilli and he gets a bit carried away? That's kind of where I think I'll go with it sometime.
Yeah.
I've never, and I say this and I think Simon will appreciate this, I've never thought of miming or even actually giving him a blowjob, but
it's not true, is it?
But it's one of those, it's not entirely true. But it's, I'd be tromboning him. But
Fleming back on this thing. I've only been on for about 10 minutes. It's going well.
But it was one of those, yeah, like, and of course I ended up kind of getting to know, at least, you know, I could kind of, and I ended up working a bit on Transformers. Of course, I would then see Simon and Andrew at Transformers conventions where I felt a lot less nervous around them. And I could just speak to them, like, you know, as chums. And then I ended up working with both of them, you know, and that's kind of, you know, that's been years of a quite successful, you know, I've been to Simon Furman's house. I've looked after Andrew Wildman's dog. I mean, it's sort of things where I've sat there at 7 years old, like just sit and I'm like imagining, who is this Andy Wildman? Who is Simon Furman? What do they look like? Who are these people that, like, you know, and to actually just say, oh, yeah, I hung out with him and, you know, his wife.
Cool, because funny enough, you know, Vince once watered someone's budgie.
Watered their budgie? Is that slang for something?
No, it isn't. I actually just looked at it.
Oh, you can come and water my budgie anytime, Vince.
That's very similar to how she sounds, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Jenny Oblad, I looked after her budgie while she was on holiday.
You watered her budgie. Given the content of her comics, I'm actually surprised it isn't a slang.
That's exactly how I've been playing it for the last year.
Oh, I don't know why I still do this show.
I'm staying out of the fray.
That's not like you, Dan.
To be fair, the damage has been done.
Right, back on point. One of the things we asked on Twitter. You calm yourself, JP. You're an animal. An absolute animal. And you're welcome back anytime.
Yes.
We asked the listeners, who's your favourite giant robot in comics? And we had some interesting sort of replies. I was trying to think of the word then. I'm too busy thinking about dragons bumming buses. Anyway.
Now I am.
Get off. You Google it.
Now, Gareth Hopkins at GRThink said Armored Gideon, maybe. Does that ring a bell?
2000 AD character.
Ah, right, there you go. Classic, now, Stuart Mulrain at Token Nerd, the man behind True Believers, he said that they're not giant robots, but I've always had a soft spot for the Metal Men.
Yeah, I like them too. Okay. Yeah, they're cracking characters.
Are they robots? They are, aren't they?
Yeah. Androids. Is that different? I don't know.
Well, we've had a bit of android discussion.
They're a type of robot. Yeah.
I suppose so, yeah.
Tom Curry at this chucklehead, he said, I always like the tripods from War of the Worlds. Scary enough to really make an impression.
They're like tanks. They might go like with the whole ship. Sorry?
They're more like a ship or a
I'm going to go with the thing about Daleks where everyone said they're robots or not. They're like tanks, aren't they?
Yeah, because Daleks aren't robots, are they? Cybermen are robots.
No, they're cyborgs.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry.
And it's slightly more scary than fucking gay puddles, which is what we had last night.
I like the way you said it's scarier than fucking gay puddles. Because, as a sentence, I was literally imagining someone lying down humping a puddle, and I'm like,
I love that your imagination went straight there. That's great. Was it me you imagined? Please say it was.
I didn't see their face, only their ass. So yes, it was you.
if it was a tramp stamp, it was Vince.
I'd say they were moderately hairy. Yes, you found the picture. There you are. There's one of them. I might have got it wrong in terms of
the school bus. So there might be more than one.
There is definitely a school bus one though that is just delightful.
This show.
I don't want to Google dragons having sex with cars again because.
Oh my god! You have found one.
I put that in incognito mode to look for that.
I've clicked on that and not done it on incognito. So,
for anyone listening who wonders what we're going on about, Dan's just sent us a picture of a dragon bumming a car.
Can I also just say that it's got 5,494 views.
Wow!
And when you click on the image, it says dragons having sex with cars. It's an internet paraphilia, an art subculture based on sexual intercourses between automobiles and legendary creature dragons.
Oh my god!
That sounds like poorly translated English. But
I think we've discovered a topic for a future show.
Yeah, I think so.
Jenny, you're glad coming back on. She seems to know your audience.
You cut off for a second there. Sorry.
Now, also at Ross_zombie, he said Atomic Robo is pretty cool, but also man-sized. Yeah. And he also said, I'll have to go with the Sentinels.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
classic.
Like that.
I think,
yeah, that's a good one.
I think in terms of certainly mainstream comics, just giant robots like within like a superhero universe or, you know, that kind of world, the Sentinels are probably the strongest and certainly the scariest.
They still got that element to them, though, I think. So you're still worried that they'll kill someone, I think.
Yeah, yeah. They're seemingly kind of... they're not unstoppable. But whenever they turn up, you do get a feeling that something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
Shit is going to go down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I mention Dynamo Joe? Has anyone heard of him?
No, heard of that one.
Dynamo Joe's a giant robot in the future and part of the Dynamo class of robo soldiers. And it was a 15-issue run from First Comics.
Okay.
86 to 88. Written by John Ostrander, actually.
Oh, cool.
I'm a fan of. And it was the backup in Mars, the comic Mars, came out from First Comic, and he was also in First Adventures before getting his own series. Really, really good stuff. Very in the style of Robotech, that kind of look to it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah, good stuff.
On the Facebook group, Jay Gunn mentioned the 2000 AD story you mentioned with the big...
Oh, from Robusters. Oh, so good, that, isn't it?
But the one in the port, the northern seaport,
big robot fights off Mechquake and all those other sort of huge robots, and yeah, just beautiful stuff. And I think Pat chimed in on that, didn't he?
He did.
So much you'd enjoy writing it. Yeah, that's a great story, and still holds up now. Actually, really, really does. You know,
another one that you might know, Tony. At Del Dracula, he replied with Red Ronin. Have you heard of that one?
Red Ronin was. I know Red Ronin from his appearance in a two-part story. I think it was 196 to 197, something like that, in the Avengers run. With George Perez on art. I think David Michelinie wrote it. Really good stuff.
I said those kind of big robots, those kind of giant ones fighting like Dragon Man and other characters of that ilk.
Yeah, very good. And the Hulkbuster armor, I suppose. I know not technically a robot, although on occasion control from elsewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, but then again, that's more like a suit of armor, isn't it?
Occasionally, I'll stop sending them.
You can't see this, folks, but the Skype chat is awash with dragon flavoured filth.
That's the worst. I'm not seeing. There are some really nice. I'm trying to search for it, but I can't. Yeah, sorry.
And we can't put any of this on the Facebook page, can we?
No, not really. Yeah, we'll get more hate mail.
Need some more of that.
Yeah,
yeah. We haven't had any for a couple of months.
Another listener said at Michael S. Alford 1. He said Mecha Godzilla, hands down.
Yes.
I got a soft spot for Mecha Godzilla as well.
I finished reading the Kaiju Max. That there's a whole load of that. Because it's set in like a prison for kaiju monsters, there's a whole kind of subsection of robot kaiju who kind of have stepped away from their kind of monstrous bodies and now robots, and that's really well done. I've got a copy of that for you, Tony, so next time I see it, give it to you.
Brilliant. I've got a pile of stuff to give you, actually. We must meet up next week.
Room.
Okay.
Well,
maybe need two rooms.
Michael Alford also said, why do giant robots always have to point out how puny we are?
Was that a rejected line from a Carpenter song?
Touché.
Well, it doesn't fit the flow of the song, does it really?
No.
So I can see why she should cut it out.
But there's a lot of people...
Hey, wait a minute, Mr. Kaiju. Yeah.
Now, there's so many... cool sort of robots that people brought up there, and we did a little poll earlier today, who would win in a giant robot rumble, and we had four choices. Let's see who everyone on this show thinks will win before I release the results. Now, the four choices were Optimus Prime, Voltron. Shut up, Tony. Voltron, Mecha Godzilla, and the Iron Giant.
Oh.
I'm a bit tired of people posting about how the Iron Giant makes them cry. Everyone seems to go, I've never seen it. I'm not watching it if it makes you cry.
He's got no tear ducts, Tony. Yeah, it is really sad.
It is, but
yeah. We'll go cry now.
Massive Optimus fan, but I've got the impression that Voltron's a bit more of a threat.
Yeah, I voted Mechagodzilla, but I got to tell you, but Voltron probably won it.
Yeah, I think I think Mechagodzilla would win it because he's just enormous. There's just no way he could lose.
Voltron's bigger than Mechagodzilla, isn't he? Isn't Voltron?
Is he? Mechagodzilla must be skyscraper sized.
Yeah, he stamps on buildings and things, doesn't he?
Yeah, and Voltron I thought would sort of be, I don't know, like a.
I have to Google
four,
this.
Four-story house kind of thing.
Yeah, there's got to be a size chart somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah.
So, does everyone think Mechagodzilla then? Is that what we're saying?
No,
I'd vote Prime, but because I'm voting with my heart. but my head says it would be Mechagodzilla.
Okay.
I mean, Prime would like defeat him and then die.
Yeah.
Die at the end anyway, but he'd still win.
Yeah.
Kind
of. He's the smallest out of them, isn't he, Prime?
He's probably about the same size as the Iron Giant. I reckon they're about the same.
Very true. So you're saying Voltron, are you?
Yes.
JP, you're saying Mechagodzilla if you're with your head, and Optimus Prime with your heart.
Prime, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And who does Tony think?
When you say Prime, do you mean the Uma Thurman movie?
No. Stop trying.
Of course. That's what I'm always thinking of. I only got into Transformers by accident because of my love for that movie.
Uma Thurman's a 37-year-old divorced Catholic businesswoman. Why is she Catholic? Falling for David Bryan, a 23-year-old Jewish artist. That sounds quite good, actually. You might watch that.
Oh, jeez. You watch it.
I'm saying Mechagodzilla. Let's go Mechagodzilla.
Okay. The results. In fourth place, with 13%, Optimus Prime.
Oh, fuck you. I mean, I understand.
Yeah, people are stupid.
Yeah, no, it's understandable. Oh, no, I've got a lot of respect for people that voted that way.
Went off your heart there. Just the instant reaction. Fuck you. Yeah.
In third place, with 20%, Mechagodzilla.
Oh, fuck.
People are stupid.
In second place, with 27%, Voltron.
Oh,
so the Iron Giant won.
Yeah, with 40%.
What? Hello?
Discuss.
What's that with these people?
I can only assume everyone's taken leave of their senses this bank holiday.
Because little baby Jesus told them to, didn't it?
On a chocolate high.
They're full of egg. Yeah, they're full of egg. And they've gone mad. They've got the egg madness I've read so much about.
Well, so I take it we don't agree with that result.
I don't know. Iron Giant wouldn't even start the fight. He'd be kind of like, no.
I can only think this is people just winding me up because they take pleasure in it.
You think that every week, though, Tony.
Sorry?
You think that every week about everything.
That's true.
It's true.
I think about everything, never mind every week in my whole life.
So. But how did they take down the Iron Giant in the film? I can't remember now. Oh, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen the Iron Giant.
Well, they don't, do they? He sort of does a thing.
What, does he die from sadness or something? Does he eat something stupid?
He's heroic, and then at the end, it's like, oh, he's not really. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen the Iron Giant, but to be honest, apart from Tony, we'll let Tony off. Most people have seen it, haven't they?
I literally only saw it last month. The first time.
Okay.
Did you cry?
I'm definitely teary. I don't know if I actually cried, but it was definitely sad. It was moving. But it's kind of like a bittersweet sort of.
Optimus Prime died in the movie and like you would never get over it.
No, I still haven't.
No. You're a great man. Of course we haven't. We can admit that. I
still lash out and hit my wife and son. Because I haven't got over the death of a cartoon character from
20-odd years ago.
Has anyone ever died genuinely in a bit of fiction that you've obviously thought, oh, that's really sad, and you still think about now? Is anyone upset by anything?
Are
you talking about probably. Comics?
Just anything, yeah. Any fiction.
Oh, what?
A couple of times. Yeah, I would say so. It's not never kind of really stuck with me, but kind of...
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, oh, fuck. That sucks.
Definitely... I won't watch Marley and Me. I can't watch that. It makes me too sad.
Yeah.
Gone. Some TV and film stuff that's had me, but I still like not like oh I can't get over it, but like I think about certain characters that have died, and I genuinely feel sad that they're done, that they're over. So there's a few.
You get that less so with comics though, don't you? Because you just certainly with the more mainstream, you just think they'll be back.
They're going to come back. Yeah.
You do now, don't you? But I remember when Dark Phoenix died, I thought, oh bloody hell, that's not good. And then they brought it back, didn't they, a couple of years later. Yeah. I know, but I wasn't that cynical at the time when it happened. You know.
Yeah.
They had they put it on again today. Was Warship Down? And fucking hell!
Oh god,
brute was fuck.
Yeah.
Even at the end, where like the main character survives it all, and then he dies. That's the last thing. He dies. And
I'll tell you what. Like, you
know, fucking hell.
I'll tell you what. When we thought, right, let's do a week about giant robots, I didn't honestly think we'd talk about Watership Down and dragons bumming buses.
You liar.
I didn't think it would happen. I was hoping.
Then you, sir, didn't plan accordingly. You did not plan.
A little bit
you
of
said you did a bit
there.
Of research before this, and you really haven't. It's showing through now.
I should have researched
naivete.
You more.
Oh yeah, well, if you'd have researched me properly, you'd have found my profile picture is a dragon bumming a car. So I should have given you all the information you need. You know, my main website is Dragon Spunking in a Bus Stop Is.
In a bus stop. Oh, I'm spunked
in
a
bus stop is.
Oh, okay.
You know, all of the information was there, like, you know, carefully laid out clues, but, you know,
well,
if you're not going to put in the work.
Well...
So, Tony, if you had a character that you've read that's happened to, and...
Yeah, Dark Phoenix, I think.
I think Dark Phoenix, okay.
Yeah, I reckon. Don't know if anyone else has sort of I've been that affected by anything. I'd have to think about it. I don't know.
I was reading the Game of Thrones books before they were kind of on TV, because I was cool like that.
Yeah, cool.
And then there's a sequence with a red wedding, and I read it. I was on the train into work, and I read it through, and I was like, holy fuck, I had to go back a couple of pages. And I just could not believe that all these kind of characters that were great and been built up, and they were just, they're all dead now.
Yeah.
And
okay.
But that's.
I watched an old 70s movie the other day called Network. Has anyone seen it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it. I know of it, sorry.
The last scene of that, I went, fuck. They really went there, didn't they? And I won't ruin it, but I recommend that everyone goes out and watches that movie. It's on Netflix, actually.
Okay.
Oh, is that
at the end of that?
Ah.
It's quite tragic.
Because I know that fucking guy's quote, like, off by heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very good film about a sort of newscaster who loses his mind. And it's a bit ahead of its time, actually, because then the TV studio take complete advantage of it and just basically ring him out for all the money that he's worth. Very interesting film.
Yeah. That's another thing to put on the list, isn't it, really? For people. If you like a feel-good film, watch that. Right, last question before we finish with giant robots. Well, or just robots in general. Giant is too... Yeah. Yeah, specific.
Robots of all sizes, you discriminatory...
Robot racist.
Yeah.
All right, Jesus. Oh, that's a bit topical, considering the date.
Yeah.
Topical.
Size of robots on Easter Sunday.
Yeah. Jesus died for them.
Well, Prime was kind of robo-Jesus in a way, wasn't it? He died and came back again, so, you know.
RoboCop.
We need a show just about that, don't we, Dan?
Yes.
And I haven't even mentioned the Hindi movie Robot that I was watching.
Oh yes.
Let's finish with
it.
Tell
us
about
Netflix. That's what I'm going to say. Please look it up. It's insane. Absolutely insane.
Is it just
seeing clips of this on YouTube years ago? And thinking, what the fuck is this?
There's a trailer on our awesome chat page, isn't there? Because I know Dan put it out there. Yeah.
Even when you've seen it, you'll go, "What the hell is going?" Like you won't know what's going on even afterwards. It's insane.
Amazing.
I like fiction to be like that sometimes. Yeah. I kind of like to be a
bit. Our show's like that. Every week, the show's like that.
My brain's like that.
Yeah.
So generally, like seeing films, stuff like that from other cultures, because stuff happens. You know, like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, they just go for it, don't they? There's no sort of suits going, you can't do that because of insurance purposes or shit like that. They just fucking go for it.
There's no suits.
Yeah. last question on robots then. Do you think we see enough robots and giant robot comics in independent and small press?
There are some. I must admit that myself and one of my friends who I work on Transformers with, called Casey Collar, we have sort of had on the back burner we've always said that we'd publish it ourselves if we couldn't get it through Image, or I kind of pitched it to Dark Horse, who were kind of interested, but there's so much that we have to do before we know anything, like work on it even slightly, that will be about robots. I don't want to say too much, but it would genuinely not be like anything that anyone's ever done before.
That's a bold
with
claim.
Robots. I genuinely is, and it's like every time a new film comes out with robots, like Ex Machina, or you know, whatever, Automata, all these films. Like I devour it, and I read a lot of, you know, Isaac Asimov, stuff like that in the build up to it, in terms of all this kind of stuff. Nice. And there's nothing like what we're planning to do. And I really want to get around to telling this story before that happens, because there's been a good half dozen things I've got. I've got this amazing idea, and it sits there like percolating for a couple of years, three years, 4 years, and then all of a sudden, oh, there it is, it's coming out in the cinema next week, or a comic book's come out with exactly the same concept. And I really hate it when that happens. So this is one of those ones. It's been set in... We discussed it about 5 or 6 years ago, and we're like, yes, we have to make this happen, and it's just finding the time is tricky.
Okay, I think we're in the situation. I don't know what you think about this, guys, but I think we're in the situation a bit like martial arts comics, where people shy away from it a little bit because they think so much has been done in anime and in manga that they think perhaps it's not our place. Do we know enough about it? Will we get called out on it? You know, because there's an awful lot, isn't there? You know,
yeah.
That doesn't stop people with the old superheroes, but definitely on the robot front.
I also think, like artwork-wise, robots is a lot more
difficult.
I think it's easy to say it's difficult, isn't it? Really, but you know, drawing a plain figure and just saying they've got a late, you know, a sort of spandex costume on is a bit different to drawing a robot that actually looks like it functions and works. And that's why whenever I've seen, like, you know, Transformers or whatever comics that have got giant robots in, you know, whether it's adaptions of films or anything, even if the story is utter tripe, the artwork, you've got to respect that, because that to do those sort of forms over and over, I mean, that would scare the shit out of me.
Even colouring them, it takes me at least twice as long to colour a Transformers book than it does to colour anything else. But you don't get paid twice as much. So, if it wasn't a case of completely loving, you know, Transformers as a thing, then, you know, there's a lot of people who won't work on Transformers, you know, if they're not into it, because it's hard work. There's a lot of... You've got to get the colours right, because the fans demand that they look like how they're supposed to look. When you colour Spider-Man... You know, it's easy. You know, he's red and blue, and then the background is whatever color. You know, what color's New York? Well, whatever color you need it to be. But with Transformers, you're looking at, you know, laser blasts and glowing eyes, and you know, you've got to do. There's all effects layers. There's, you know, you might have a red character stood next to three other red characters because that's what they're like, and then a bright green one. And it's like, well, those are the colors they are. But you'd never choose to lay out a scene like that if it was people.
You
make colour choices, so there's an awful lot of trying to make things work without looking like garish, or you know, and effectively it is a science fiction book, so sometimes you're on Earth, sometimes you're in space, sometimes you're in, you know, on a spaceship, or in a, you know, on Cybertron, where you know, there's just an awful lot of effects, and it's all angles and, you know, textures and shines and stuff. So it's just, there's a lot more to rendering.
Yeah. As colouring has become more sort of detailed, it's just made that infinitely just more difficult, hasn't it, really?
It is hard. It is the hardest book that I do. I don't say that as a complaint. It's hard, but you know, it's hard but enjoyable. Kind of almost takes.
Well, you're getting to work on Transformers, aren't you? You know, at the end of the day.
But I suppose people will call you if you get it wrong. People will call you on it, won't they? As well, I suppose. You know, there's fans out there, aren't there?
The Transformers that has its own wiki. And they literally catalogue errors. And it is things that characters in the background's missiles were red and they should have been white.
Oh, Christ.
And you can in a way, it's brilliant that there is that level of passion. And at times, it's when you're really trying to hit a deadline.
Yeah, shouting my life out loud.
And you're desperately trying, you know, you're having to go to unbelievable lengths in the background to do tiny details that really is only going to bother about six people if you do it right or do it wrong.
Yeah.
But like I say, there's enough passion about Transformers for me to want to do that. So I'm kind of making a rod for my own back. But people do care. They do care when you get it wrong. But like I say, you know, if I did Spider-Man green and blue, like, it's very noticeable that that's wrong, and it's also very hard to get wrong. But when you've got someone like, I mean, I'm looking at Fortress Maximus in front of me now, and he's got, you know, red, blue, grey, white, another shade of dark grey, like a translucent green, and they're all in different parts, and there's, like, this circle here is grey, and this part of his arm's black, and, you know, once you start getting into that kind of territory, you know, and you've got 12 characters on a page across six panels, it does get to be, oh, this is going to take me a little while, I think.
You would have thought, all the comics that you could make a 3D comic out of would be Transformers. I mean, once you make models and you have them rigged, surely, like, you'd be punching out comics relatively easily, I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't happened. I did know an artist. I think he only actually only did one cover, but he used to 3D render. I think he'd 3D render and then colour them, and they were very good actually. But to be honest, the artists that they've got on Transformers at the minute are all kind of geniuses. They've got that sort of they just get sort of that architectural. It's more architectural than. You know, but they still get the body language right. You know, they still inject a sense of humanity and emotion into the robots, but they have that technicality, which is just absolutely borderline witchcraft, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, I find a lot of, you know, artists, I find it difficult to imagine how they, to compute just how amazing they are, but I do feel like getting that real technical detail nailed is very impressive.
Because I was thinking during the week that perhaps the Western way we do comics, we should look more to the East and start making it. I don't know, perhaps it's a bit kind of sacrilegious. We're moving away from kind of an art form and to more of a kind of a factory of this pumping out content and comics. And
They've got large teams like working
large
on, like...
teams doing comics. So like you have one artist doing the foreground characters, one artist doing the background, and just get these things out and get the stories moving. And
there's a lot to be said for a consistent art style through a series as well. I mean, that's something we've talked about in the past, isn't there? And to have that, I'm always thinking of Ultimate Spider-Man. I think the Bagley issues of that, whether you like him or not, I love him. But the consistency of a long series with the same artist, I really like that, you know, and that's what makes me stick with a comic sometimes. You know,
there's a couple of times where the art's changed and it's considerably worse. And it's like, oh, fucking hell. It's really, really off-putting.
Well, and your eye has to figure out who's who sometimes, don't you? Your eye has to figure out who's that. Yeah. Is that meant to be Captain America?
Is that so noticeable? I mean, this is devil's advocate here. Is that so noticeable when it comes to robot comics? You know, because they're not so human, are they? Then, you know.
I think the only one I would pull out of that would be, is it Tom Scioli? Is that his name?
Did, oh, yeah.
I think he was so different, and different in a good way, but just so different from the rest, you know.
I was going to say, if you go back to Marvel UK, the artists would change. You know, the UK originated strips would be 5 or 6 pages,
right.
And a story might run across 4 issues, 5 issues, and the artist would often change multiple times across those 4 or 5 issues. Now, as a kid, I didn't really mind that. The art styles are insanely jarring in a way, because you have artists like Dan Reed who would draw these very organic looking robots, almost like they were melting, and when they transformed they'd have like Kirby dots coming out of them, and then between their robot and then their car mode.
Yeah.
And then you have like some guys whose work was very technical, and they felt very robot-y. And like Andrew Wildman, who I loved, he sort of drew like Optimus Prime's faceplate looked like it was almost like a movable metal that was over a mouth. So there were times a Prime would look shocked, and you could almost see like his mouth was open under the faceplate, as if the mouthplate slightly sunk in. So there were such variations, whereas like Jeff Senior, who, you know, obviously did Dragon's Claws and who did Death's Head, you know, was very like angular and actiony and dynamic, but very flat.
Yeah.
So if anybody is picking up the definitive G1 collection of sort of part work, you'll see like just how wild the styles go as the Marvel UK reprint stuff. But I do agree. I do like consistent style for at least the arc of a story.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think Marvel UK sort of, it almost became part of the charm, was just how insane the differences would be.
I mean, it's fine when it's kind of like you, that's the precedent. But I can remember back reading Silver Surfer and it had Ron Lim doing it, and then like an issue or two he'd drop out and someone else would do it, and just it really wrenches you out of it.
Especially like, where people like Lim or Bagley, they've got such a style that you know, and then when it changes up, it's quite jarring. You know,
doesn't feel like the same character I've kind of come to know and love, as it were.
Especially if it's mid-story. I know everything's done in sort of arcs these days for trades, aren't they? And I think if you insert different artists in the middle of that, that's, I think, the real crime at the moment. I'd rather have like a nice long story in a trade or in a series, and then you can change the artist. But I think a nice long run, like you say, Dan, would be my ideal. I really do think that.
Yeah. Well, the one that really jars is that fucking The Punisher, Mike Zeck. And the producer or the editor getting panicky and pulling Zek off the final issue of the mini series and dropping in another guy, and the art is just an absolute, it's not a patch on Zek stuff. And that's always like, oh.
Yeah, apparently there's going to be a break in the run on one of the X-Men books, the artist, I think, is coming off that, isn't it?
Well, he's got 2 or 3 in the bag, I think, and then he's stepping down.
Okay, that's a shame.
They've redone that now, haven't they?
Has it been? The new issue come out? Is it? Oh, okay.
Like the Colossus's T-shirt is now blank. They've changed the street sign to something else.
Okay, I see there was I see there was a Facebook post in one of the Facebook groups. I mean, someone was trying to sell issue 1 for $1,000.
Oh,
good luck, mate, with that one.
Jesus.
I don't know they kind of. Good luck to them, but I don't think that's worth a fucking penny.
No, if there's a controversy, there's money to be made.
Yeah.
Apart from on this show, we're controversial every week.
They will sell it and someone will buy it, but it's just like that person's going to sell it again. Yeah, finally! I got a book with racist stuff in it.
Yeah. It's like plates from Hitler's table, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got Hitler's soup ladle.
Kitchen, haven't you? Yeah. Ladle's realm.
We're learning so much about you this week. JP.
Yeah, I know. It's dangerous, isn't it?
You wait until you listen back. Oh, dear God.
My Facebook profile does also have me holding a Nazi ladle. You should have known this was coming.
Yeah. Yeah, to be honest, your Twitter handle is at Nazi ladle. So I should have.
Yeah, Nazi ladle. That's got to be the name of a transform, actually.
Ladle was right.
Anyway,
they made the soup run on time.
I knew this week was going to go in all... I said at the beginning of the show that it was going to go in all directions, and we don't disappoint on this show, do we?
Every which way but loose.
Yes! Right turn, Clyde. So there you go. That was a hell of a lot of robot talk. Sexy, bus-infused, and more. But now, do we have any shout-outs that we'd like to say, folks?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Go for it, Tony.
Enniskillen Comic Festival is the 5th to the 6th of May. Yeah, if you go to Twitter, it's at EKN Comic Fest. At it. I think it's a bit of a 2000 AD this year. It's John Wagner, Carlos Esquira, Yannick Paquette is in the mix. I've got a commissioner of his sitting in front of me. Alan Grant, Clint Langley, Lou Stringer, Cam Kennedy, and Gronier McContry, who has been on the show before, we're a fan of. I think I might have accidentally revealed that we are guests at True Believers last week. Is that the case? I don't know.
You accidentally revealed it, and then it was announced. To be honest, I don't know how many people listen to us announce it. So,
no, I don't think we're a big draw to a comic convention. I just thought it was nice that we were going. But
we're always the guests that people are like. Who?
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
What? I did write that on a comic festival Facebook page today when they announced someone. I went, who? That makes me giggle. My trolling of comic conventions.
May it long continue.
Thank you. So we're guests. It's the 2nd of February next year. OKTrueBelievers.com. Thank you, Stu, by the way. Go and get your tickets. And the other one, which I'll be talking about much more next week, is there's a pop-up comic event, a pop-up art event in Brighton on the 13th of May, run by our friend Simon at Boeing. And it's that the Hanover Pub, 242 Queen's Park Road, between 12 p.m. and 5 p.m. Go to the Facebook page, Pop-Up Brighton, and you'll see more about it there. There you go.
Perfect. Nice. Anyone else got any shout-outs?
Quick shout-out. The awesome comic pod jam piece is rolling along really well. That's some fantastic pieces of artwork in for it. I think we're going to take stock and see how we are at the end of this week. But the instructions on kind of supplying the artwork are on the Facebook page. I'll share it again so we can kind of generate a bit more interest. But thanks for everyone who sent their artwork in so far. It's looking really good.
Some crackers.
We're quite a few now, aren't we?
Mm. Yeah.
All different shapes, sizes, and different characters. Some new characters, some classics. It's great.
It's nice to see.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice piece, I think. I just want to give a shout out to Chris Sides, old Sidesy. I just want to give him a very big thank you because he's been in France recently. And while he was in there, he picked me up a copy of Swordmaster. Which was the book I ranted about and said, even though I can't read the words, I'd love to have an original hardcover book. So he picked up that for me. That's beautiful. That is.
I'm hoping to see him actually. I think him and Jay Martin are at OxCon, the Oxford convention, next weekend, which I'm hoping to get to if I get a chance.
Nice.
I think there are quite a big small press crowd there amongst all the shitty B-list celebrities.
Now it's time for the recommendations. Do we all have recommendations for our listeners?
Yes.
I believe we do.
Yes.
Who wants to go first?
You go first, Vince. Your turn.
Yeah, you go, Vince.
Oh, great. I picked up a Vertigo book recently. I've read the first two issues of Savage Things. Have any of you read this?
Okay. No, I've not read it.
It's a Justin Jordan book, and I'm a big fan of his work. Obviously, he did Luther Strode, and he did is it Spread for Image, that disease book. Pencils by Ibrahim Mustafa, inks by the same man.
Stuff.
Colored by Jordan Boyd. What has Mustafa done before?
Did he do? Oh, I'm trying to think. He didn't do High Crimes, did he? He did something else. I'll follow him on Facebook. He'll come to me in a minute. Give me a second, I'll look it up.
It's a very cool book, though. Essentially, it's like the Bourne films meets Dexter. The setup is this. 25 years ago, a secret government organisation kidnapped children and trained them to be chaos agents who went on to just fuck shit up. That's a simple way to do it. But when they... proved too difficult to control, the powers that be exterminated their kill squad and thought that was it. But it didn't work. And now there's a rogue band of, like, these kids who are now fully grown. And essentially they're the worst monsters the world has ever known. And they're just killing people in horrible ways. And no one knows how to stop them. Until they call in one of the people who were... He was one of the kids, but he walked away from the whole program. His code name is Abel. And he is... Basically, they're all sociopaths. They're absolutely... If you imagine Jason Bourne just slash a serial killer. And it's that kind of... It's an 8-issue miniseries. I've read the first 2 issues. It's the first time I was introduced to Mustafa's work. And it, High Crimes. He did do High Crimes.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I just looked. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and that's a great series.
I've heard a lot about High Crimes, actually. Yeah, that's got a great concept, hasn't it, I think?
Oh, incredible. Yeah, very clever.
Yeah. And these two together, it's just a match made in heaven, actually. It's just full on. It's not for everyone. It's definitely not all ages, because there is some brutal bloodletting, as well as cool character bits. I love Justin Jordan's work. Ever since I read Luther Strode, I followed a lot of his work, and he's just got a great handle on dialogue and pacing, and just, you know, it's almost like a movie on the page a lot of the time, but without trying too hard to, you know, you read a comic and you sometimes you look at it and you think, this is just wants to be a movie, you know, this is just a movie pitch. But I think Jordan manages to write these things so it feels like a movie, but it's not trying to sell itself that way, if that makes sense. That's how I felt about all of his projects. He's funny on Twitter as well. But it may be because it's Vertigo. I know they're having a little bit of a, well, it's not a resurgence, is it? But they're putting out a lot more books at the moment.
They have a little reboot, not a reboot, but a little shot up in publicity every so often, don't they? And they have a little resurgence. Yeah.
They sort of they're big, and then they sort of bubble down again, don't they? Or there's problems with editors or something, and then. But Savage Things, definitely. I mean, I got them on Comixology. And I thoroughly recommend it because it's just great stuff, and it's 8 issues, so it's a nice series. It's going to be a nice story, I think, in completion. So look that up. I'll probably post, as I have done for the past couple of shows, I'll probably post something on our Facebook pages, etc., so you can see what I mean. It's a good way to sell books, isn't it, really?
I think.
So there you go, that's my one, Savage Things. Who's next?
I've got one sent in by Michael Phoenix, Gods of Men, Shadow of the Sentinel. It's got quite a... let me read out who worked on it. So Michael Phoenix, the creator, Christian Paris, the artist, Stefano Valentini, the colorist, and friend of the show, Rob Jones, letterist. It's also got pinups by other show alumni as Matt Rook, Gareth Hopkins, Sam Bentley, and some wank stain called Dan Butcher.
Oh, me. Not him. Hey. He gets fucking everywhere. He's like the SARS virus. Only, there's... like, in your ass.
It's a really fantastic comic. Really strong opening. Essentially, Earth is being controlled by this superhuman character called the Sentinel, who's kind of built himself a kind of throne on the moon with his symbol, and he sits in the middle of it. And he gets... He's like Superman, watching over and listening to the Earth. And Earth, the various governments decided we had enough of being ruled over, and they try and sort of take him on to disastrous results. It's very similar to, well, not similar. It's a tonally similar to stuff like The Authority and Stormwatch. Okay. Very nihilistic and kind of hardcore. It's like cities blowing up. The artwork is absolutely fantastic, as is the colouring. It's a really worthwhile comic. I'll definitely check it out. You can go and take a look at it at facebook.com/ Gods of Men comic, and it's on Kickstarter as well. But I think the Kickstarter's finished. I'm not quite sure how Michael's distributing the comic. So if you head over to the Facebook page and check it out, I'd recommend doing that.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, issue 1, Mythic Press.
Nice. Tony, what about you?
I got sent through a comic by Ricardo Moe, who is a listener and a friend of mine, called Colossi, which I put a review up this week on Down Tubes. Anyone look at it? Yeah. It is art by Alberto Muriel, who's also the artist who did Propeller with as well, which is a great series well worth looking at. Colours by Staladio, who's a lady, I think, from Spain, and letters by HDE. Is that like a company that does lettering? I don't know, actually. Does anyone know?
I don't know, actually.
Everyone heard of them?
No, I've never heard of them. That's quite interesting.
He's a person.
He is? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure why he goes by a pseudonym, but yeah.
Yeah. It's funky as fuck, I think is how I described it in the piece. And then as classic John Freeman did, he changed the word to F star star star, as he does with all my stuff. But I stand by my funky as fuck comment. Funky as fuck. But I actually bought a T-shirt because I really like the art in this. Really lovely. And the colours really do stand out. There's a couple of nighttime scenes in it that the colourist does such good work on. But it's basically, imagine Land of the Giants, if anyone remembers that TV series.
I used to love Land of the Giants.
Yeah, it's a bit like that with a little bit of a few twists in it, a little bit more violent. And a sort of a shuttle crash lands in a planet, and it's presumably it's our Earth, filled with giants compared to these people, but it's also got a little bit more of a twist to it, a bit more sort of a sci-fi twist, a bit of a sort of Twilighty Zone sting to it. At one point a nun gets killed by a giant scorpion, and I thought this is going well, I'm liking this. And they sort of run about avoiding cats. Yes, there's cats in it. See, another comic I like with cats in, so that proves I'm not a cat hater. And there's a sort of android, not a giant one, but there's an android character in it who's this sort of slightly meta character, sort of suave looking suit wearing sort of human robot. Very, very good stuff. Go to Down the Tubes and have a look at some of the images I put up. There's a few sample pages I put up. It's from Vault Comics and it's $3.99. it's available now, and I think it's coming out through Diamond, I think, in the next couple of weeks, but I think it's available digitally right at the moment. Gorgeous, gorgeous stuff, and really well written, and well worth a follow. I think it's a mini series from Ricardo, who you can follow on Twitter. Yeah, great stuff, really good.
Nice,
nice one.
JP,
I'm grotesquely behind in almost everything comics at the minute, so I'm just gonna recommend something which I recommend all the time. It's just one of those books I love. We're in the process of moving house at the minute. It's one of those books I haven't had a chance to read for a while, and it resurfaced in my burying and unburying of things. Yeah. It's Midnight Nation.
Oh, yes.
James Straczynski. Yeah.
Indeed, Straczynski, Gary Frank on the art. I think it might be Laura Martin on the colours, but can't quite remember. It's one of those books which there's not enough books that are self-contained, and they just go on a run and then stop. I get a little bit, this is why I'm so behind on everything, anything that continues I tend to fall so far behind on that I don't know what's happening anymore. But it's just one of those books. It's a very sort of moving book. It's quite an interesting kind of take on kind of like destiny and choice, and, you know, a little bit of kind of a certain way of playing heaven and hell and angels and demons, but in a very uncliched, really interesting way. Beautiful art, very moving.
Gary Frank's art for that, I remember reading that in issues, and that the art for that's amazing. Some of Gary Frank's best stuff, I think.
I think so. I mean, I love Gary Frank's stuff. I mean, I fell in love with him.
Gorgeous stuff, mainly because
he's such a nice chap as well.
What is he doing at the moment?
I think he's doing I think he was doing stuff for DC still, but I'm not 100% sure. Because I feel like Gary Frank stuff isn't especially well publicized when it comes out.
No.
But like he's always doing stuff, but I keep discovering it like after the fact.
You know, I've definitely seen something recently, and I can't for the life of me think what it was. Yeah. Lovely, clean sort of line to everything, isn't it? Obviously the run he did on the Hulk was probably my favourite of his stuff.
Yes. I loved him on Supreme Power as well.
One of his public runs, could we say, Supergirl, wasn't it Supergirl he did?
He did Superman.
He did. I swear he did Supergirl at one point. I swear he did.
You're right, he did, yes, in the 90s.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it was after his Hulk run. I mean, for me, he was doing it at one of the points when I was reading Hulk, like, monthly. Yeah. I you don't see. I'd want to see more Gary Frank. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Fair, lovely chap, Bristolian.
So I didn't know that.
He's Bristolian. It's a bizarre. My wife, before her marriage, she used to work in a school, and the lady that she worked with was Gary Frank's sister.
So
he lives in Italy now. Gary is one of those. I think he loves it in Italy. Well, he might be, depending on the way things are going with Brexit. Christ knows. But I really like Gary as a person. It's nice when you meet someone whose work you love and then they end up being really lovely people.
Yeah.
So I hate it when that's not the case. I thought Vince was all right until this.
Why is it me? Well, it's always me.
you always hurt the ones you love, Vince. That's the truth. I love that book. It's one of those ones where I feel that you can hand to someone who doesn't understand or get comics or really, you know, and just hand it to them. So just read that and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I think it's you don't need to know that. You know, Professor X was in the Savage Land for 10 issues and was dead, and this is his clone, but it's a duplicate from Dimension whatever. Like, there's not all of that.
Yeah.
It's just everything you need to understand that is in it.
And I agree with you. I read a lot more self-contained stuff now. Even if it's like, if it's Marvel stuff, I'm more likely to read something like Avengers Arena or, you know, Superior Foes, where you've got this self-contained story that isn't beholden to everything else that's going on.
Do you remember the days where you used to read a comic, and because distribution in this country was so poor, you'd read, like, you'd get an issue of the X-Men or the Avengers or Spider-Man, and then you wouldn't see it again for another three or four issues, would you?
Yeah.
Because there's only so many newsagents. And I used to take great pleasure in trying to figure out who was what and what was who, you know, and just sort of disappearing into, you know, continuity now, like we all do. We're all sort of very OCD around it, aren't we? Yeah. I quite like picking up the odd copy. I picked up Kingpin yesterday because Lambo's in it, and I thought, I haven't read this so far, and I'm just going to read this issue because it looks really good, yeah, and I quite enjoyed that. I think we should do that more. I think we shouldn't be so precious about it sometimes, you know.
I think that kind of harks back to what we were saying about, like, it felt very personal and you were getting these issues for you. It didn't feel like anyone else was kind of reading it, apart from your nemesis who was buying the same comic as you.
I think it also depends on the series, you know. For instance, if I was to read an Avengers or, I don't know, a Justice League or anything at the moment, I wouldn't have an idea what's going on. There's too many threads. But a series like you say, like Kingpin or a smaller one, it's a bit easier to grab hold of in terms of narrative.
But things are not that long ago. And in fact, when I started the process of writing comics, I always would leave enough information in that if you'd never read an issue before, now you would still get what was going on. You know, it's not even that long ago that they stopped. Straczynski used to do it for Spider-Man. The first page of every new issue of Spider-Man would kind of be, you know, oh, I can't believe I'm finding myself here fighting the Kingpin or whatever, or, you know, I'm trying to find Aunt May and now I'm stuck here. Like, just enough that you go, okay, I know what was going on in the last issue. Or, you know, I'm weakened because I've been bitten by, you know, a radioactive chimp. Whatever the thing was, like, you would... I'm trying to think what would be a natural enemy for a spider, and I don't know.
Other animals are available.
I think definitely, like a frog, a radioactive frog. Yeah. There you are. Perhaps you'll die. But the... I think that's a lost art as well, because not every comic, even where they have the recap at the beginning, they don't always have that anymore.
Is it Stan Lee who said every comic is someone's first comic? I think it was.
Yes,
I think.
I'm pretty sure.
No, that still stands, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It still should stand, whether it does or not. It still should be the case. You know,
I think certainly that is never more important than in small press these days. If you're doing a long running small press comic, people need to, because sometimes you sell out of issue one, so you kind of need to know what you're doing by issue two, you know.
Yeah, or there could be 2 years between issue one and issue two.
Yeah.
And someone might pick up issue two, never knowing where they put issue one, and just be able to go, oh, I know what's happening, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that it's a sort of, I think for someone like myself, and I always say, so the more you work in something, the less time you end up having for it. I mean, I have less time to sleep and eat and like do anything, but I want to be able to pick up something and know where it's going pretty early on, or
yeah,
you know, it's like both Marvel and kind of DC have become slightly impenetrable to me at the minute, because there's too many like events and times, and you need to know what happened in Original Sin to know what's going on in.
I think that's a problem that they're having issues. Yeah. They have been having issues with, I think.
Yeah, I hope they address that. I really do.
Me too.
Yeah. It's a real closed club at the moment, isn't it? Unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's what I think, like, Vertigo, Image, you know, they sort of have some long running things, but they also have, you know, kind of self control. You look at something like Planetary, you know, was 27 issues in total, you know, across a very long time span. But that to me stands out as another book I wouldn't hesitate to recommend.
To
like, it elevates the form, you know, not just it's a good cop, you know, because I get people sort of say, oh, I love this Batman one, and the reason they love it is because, oh, it's the first time that Batman does X. But that only matters if you really know how Batman, like, if you do, you know what I mean, it's like, it's only relevant if you know who Batman is, and like, and Batman up to that point, or and so it's only important in the scope of if you're in that world. And it's why, like, some of the shows that I love, I find it, I'd love to just show them the episode that I think is particularly amazing, but it's only amazing if you understand how that the build up got there, like the fact that character dies or gives up their life or whatever is only important if you know, like, what that person was to begin with.
And it's the balance. It's the balance between the execution of what the, you know, the art and the story and how well it's told, compared with what you know and what you think has gone on in the past. That's unfortunately where comics lay. The real beauty should just be in the execution and the storytelling, and you can pick a comic up and read it and you go, wow, that's amazing. But the enjoyment unfortunately comes through the millions of people who then go on Twitter and Facebook and say, well, he wouldn't do that, he wouldn't do this, they've done this, this harks back to issue 263 and 1984, you know, this sort of thing, you know.
But it's working on two, I mean, on two levels. I feel like it's become progressively that it's just that some of the more mainstream books are only targeting the people who they've already won over.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, I mean, that's necessary. But I also, I mean, it's the sad truth. It's why whenever a book gets relaunched with some ridiculous sort of stunt, and people complain about it, it always sells better.
Yeah,
because all the people,
as I understand
who,
it, that margin, you know, is reducing. You know, it used to be like you double your sales with issue one. As I understand it, that is on the decline now. I was reading a report online about it the other day, and people, I think people are just becoming more shrewd and more canny towards it, aren't they? You know.
Yeah, but I think it's been sort of overdone.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I think it's just that there's less jumping on points than there used to be. You know, Secret Invasion leads to Secret Wars leads to, you know,
it seems like we've been on a roll since Civil War, to be fair. That's how I feel about it sometimes. I feel like everything has been on a roll since we had the Civil War event, you know.
But I think what made Civil War work was the fact that it was unprecedented.
Like, it was a well-told story, and I think people are still playing on it, I think, you know.
Yeah. Whereas I think stuff that came afterwards was, I mean, Secret Invasion to me was absolute gibberish. It was a wasted opportunity. And it was just sort of, and we were talking about double page spread. That Secret Invasion was like 8 issues of double page spreads of heroes fighting and nothing happening.
Yeah.
And then it ends. And I thought, I mean, I remember thinking, oh, there's that ship of 70s kind of superheroes of Crest. So, you know, you've got Captain America and whatnot. Of course, at that point, so he was dead. And I thought, this is how they're going to bring him back. He's going to be a 70s sort of Skrull who literally believes he is Captain America.
This is the one that was in the Savage Land, that one, is that the one?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think almost everybody in that ship is killed before the end of that issue. And it's like, why introduce this concept and then not doing anything? Like, there was a lot of stuff like that where it's like, I feel like Civil War, there was weight to it, there was meat to it, and like, and ultimately it wasn't about, we have to stop the, you know, the glowing orb of Monteron. It was actually, I have a fundamental
nice cheat.
Absolutely. they had a fundamental disagreement, and it was characters in conflict about their genuine beliefs.
But even
if you utterly disagreed with them, or the execution was
Civil War, basically was fantastic, and it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You know, it's amazing, but I think it's quite responsible for a lot of the things that we've had to deal with.
Paying the price for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but Midnight Nation does not suffer from this, so you need to.
No,
get
it's
it.
Very good. Cool. Yeah.
So that's why I put it high on my list. And every time I read it, I discover something sort of new in it.
Yeah. You occasionally see it in the old cheap graphic novel sections. I've seen it a couple of times recently. Yeah, it's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is a bit of a forgotten masterpiece as well. So I kind of like to try and bring it up whenever possible.
Well, this show has certainly brought up many things. And in a couple of years, it'll probably be seen as a forgotten masterpiece.
We played out our court hearing.
yes. And
when people are walking through the Louvre and there's Dragon with Dick in Bus up on the wall, there'll just be a picture of the awesome comics podcast.
Someone says, "I understand this was very popular."
Are you one of those people that thinks it's popular? Well, there's several different ways that you can let us know. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, for any of the sort of the awesome pod jam pieces and like any events and stuff, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll announce next week's guest and the topic for next week's show. I mean, these topic shows are going all over the shop, and I'm loving it, especially when I don't really know that much about a certain topic. Like this week.
I don't know much about robot comics, to be fair. Yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting listening back to this episode to see if I made any kind of sense. And like us on Facebook.
I'm listen back to them.
Hey? Like us on Facebook.
It's embarrassing.
Don't you listen back to the episodes, Tony?
Little bits occasionally.
Yeah, me too. I don't listen to bad whole ones. I find it embarrassing.
Yeah,
are you hearing myself?
It is embarrassing.
Every other bit apart from the bit where I'm talking.
Yeah, same with me.
Yeah. Oh dear. Well, at least you love us guys out there. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Could you go back to some of the edits, some of the episodes, and edit me out so I can listen just for me?
You can do that. You can do that on the clip show.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You can take your clip show and shove it. Anyway. Yeah, like us on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to get involved or just have a laugh or talk about the making of comics, it's all happening on our Facebook group.
Me, isn't it?
Yeah, Awesome Comics Talk, which is just getting bigger and better every week. And what I love about it is people are talking about the shows and they're having a laugh, but they're discussing making comics or topics in comics or like convention topics and stuff.
And just name dropping for a second, we had an awful lot of nice advice from Pat Mills this week.
Yeah.
How cool was that?
We had to switch on to admin only posts because we're getting a couple of jokers who are just coming in, dropping Kickstarter stuff, and then sodding off again.
Yeah.
Which is not really. Yeah. We want to provoke a discussion, not just be another one of the pages where people just spam links.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on and discuss something, and if that happens to include the fact that you're trying a Kickstarter, then we're all for that.
Yeah.
But don't just drop in, "I've got a Kickstarter," or "please buy my comic," and then drop out again. Yeah, but there's saying that, there's been some... Rob Jones put in a really interesting post this week about what happens when you fall out with your co-creator. And that provoked an awful lot of conversation, didn't it?
Yeah.
Really
congratulations
good.
To the Madius guys on their successful
Well done, guys. Yeah,
that's one.
I had no idea they were doing a Kickstarter.
No, I'd not heard of it.
No, I'd never Yes, so get on that Facebook group, and thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Podnose Network, and you've got a chance to leave us a review, please do. It helps get the word out, and we're just suckers for love. Oh, hang on, that's a bad turn of phrase.
Yeah. Or is it? Yeah. These are these little messages he leaves in that sort of slowly hypnotising the listener.
Yeah, right.
Breaking them down.
By the end of a show, I'm just rambling. Sometimes I listen back to it and I think, what on earth am I talking about? So let's just finish it now, shall we? Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezo, yes, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z, on Twitter. I've got a couple of things gone up and down the tubes, and one in relation to I got sent a preview for a book that comes out in the autumn called Old Farts, and that should hopefully be going live in the next couple of days. That will fuck with your brain. And there's also a piece going up at neverideanything.blogspot.com about a subject close to our hearts later this week as well.
Yeah. There you go. And I can honestly say it's nice that you popped in to say hello.
Oh, thank you, mate. It's time.
You didn't bring any sandwiches or canapes or so.
I brought the sexiness.
You brought sexy back.
Bring it to the, beat me to that one.
Where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Brilliant, which is cracking stuff at the moment.
Thank
really
you.
Enjoying that. It's a fascinating. I'm just hooked at the moment. I don't know where the story's going to go with your book.
That is a good thing about your book, is it does play about with your preconceptions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
And,
you know.
And anyone could fucking die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lovely.
Well, the El Marvo pages are kind of coming along nicely, so as soon as they're done, it's back to 2 pages a week on that. So
awesome.
That'd be good.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. Wait, I'll post in bits of artwork, or maybe I've made a banana loaf and I'll just post a picture of that.
Went to a medieval fair.
I went to a medieval fair. I don't know what's happening to me.
Turned into Alan Partridge.
And speaking of bananas, old Chris Wild Goose, he likes a banana, doesn't he? Yeah,
don't talk to me about Chris. Don't talk to me about Chris, the bastard Wild Goose. Right. after he posted up a picture of a special effects dummy that looked a bit like me.
It fucking did.
And also Mark Penman, who photoshopped it onto an actual picture of me.
Yeah.
I know your names.
This is Wild Goose getting revenge, because I spent about 4 days just emailing him pictures of bananas.
Yeah. And then, like, I just sent him a picture of a banana, and then he responds with that. Oh, well.
Because I live near him. You know, he's not a mess.
I still love them all, even if they are horrible to me.
Yeah.
So, you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And JP, where can people find
Hello.
You online?
The toilets of the services of Taunton. I'm usually
I knew you from somewhere. What?
Yeah. I'm usually in the gents on the back row. I'm on Twitter as Wordmongerer.
Oh.
So a monger of words but with an extra ER on the end. So Wordmonger on Twitter. I'm on Tumblr under the same name, but I barely ever use it.
I made my ear ball pop.
Tumblr? So I'm on there. And Facebook, just as my own name. And also, I have a Twitter account for my own one-shot self-published book, which is unearth_oneshot, which I invite you to look at and perhaps buy. And that's it.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Unless I see you in the toilets in Taunton.
I still owe you money.
Everything else is virtual.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, I feel like I owe you.
Yeah.
No, we owe you. You've been a fantastic guest. It's been an epic show this week.
Very much for having me. Unfortunately, if you've ever heard me on any other podcast, this is short.
We like the long ones.
Matron. So, yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And I'm pleased I got to speak to all three of you. So,
that's good.
We'll all have a cuddle next time we see each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll see you in Taunton.
Bow, bow, bow. Anyway, folks, now that we've all gone mad, it's time for you to go on and enjoy your week. Read loads of comics. Stay tuned for whatever's going to come from us in the next week, because it could be anything, judging by this show. The way this month's going on, it's going to be carnage by the end. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
Bye.